kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Oh, that. There I can see them now. I can see them. Yeah, look at that. Oh, that's good. I'm very jealous. You have got some great amiibo. Okay, I'm going to stop now.
Oh, what's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Fun episode today. We have a fun chat with the folks at Ripstone Games, going to be on later on in the show, chatting about Chess Ultra and all the other fun stuff that they've got going on. But before then, clearly, we have reviews to take care of, and we're going to kick things off the way we always kick things off, with our good friend Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm okay, though a little on the yawn-tastic side.
I'm feeling that. Holiday weekend, man.
I want to blame holiday weekend, but that blame lies elsewhere, which you will hear about later today. But the holiday weekend is also quite a relaxing time. I won't deny that.
What'd you do for your holiday? What'd you do so far?
I have been on a ridiculous like wardrobe overhaul kick, so I went and bought some like new shoes and stuff, which is unlike me 100%, so I'm sure the results are going to be baffling. I've become obsessed with board games, so I've purchased way more board games than a human being has any business owning. Now I got to find the people to play them with, but I did come across some people at a barbecue, which I went to a couple days ago, that seemed to be big on board games, so I'm hoping to kind of integrate myself within their web so I can finally open up all the crap I have shrink-wrapped.
Nice. And any good games in there?
Oh, yeah. There's a game called Takenoko, which is a lot of fun. A game I'm looking forward to playing called Clank, which I've heard nothing but good things about. I bought a game at Too Many Games last week called Mombasa. I got it for about $40, but apparently it's out of print, and Amazon was selling it for $130. So I was like, yeah, I'll take that. I don't even know if it's good or not. If it ends up being terrible, I can still sell it for more than I paid for it, so shoot. Yes. And then the list just goes on. Like, I got the entirety of Pixel Tactics, Dwarven Miner, whatever the hell that is, Aeon's End, Talisman. I could just go on. But then you'd be like, what the hell? This isn't a board game review show, you chump. So it's more like, I got a lot of board games.
Yeah, but board games are classy.
I like them a lot. I come to realize I hit a point where people are like, do you like video games? And we're like, oh, no. I still like video games, though. From the social dating spectrum, I have mixed feelings about them nowadays. But I still like video games. But I've come to realize that I'm hitting a point now where unless it's a certain type of game, like a game that just genuinely doesn't work outside of the video scape, I typically prefer board games for multiplayer purposes to video games. It's something about the holding of the pieces and sitting around the table talking, you know? It's something about that you don't quite get with video. Whereas single player, RPGs and the like, oh, baby, yeah, our video games it is. Because you have a DM who can describe some stuff, but I rarely come across a DM that can handle a good description quite like a game's already programmed to do, so... People's like, what about your imagination? Let it run wild. It's like, give me a DM who can max it and we'll talk shop. But it never happens. They're usually like, you walk into a bar and the guy's selling beer. Do you drink? Like, nah, I got to keep my wits about me. Well, this is going to be a very boring bar adventure. That's what I'm used to when it comes to D&D. So I'm like, you know, I'll stick with my video games for the RPG verse. So
makes sense.
How about you? How's your weekend been? What'd you end up to?
Oh, man. It's just been a weekend of relaxation. I have so much shit I should be covering and playing for the show, but I needed a break.
So I hear that, man. Sometimes it needs to happen. Walk away so when you come back, you can be rejuvenated and ready to burn out those hours.
I like, don't even have my talk show voice on, right? I'm just like, fucking whatever.
Happy 4th of July, babies!
High class, man. High class. And speaking of high class, let's kick off these reviews with quite possibly the classiest title we've ever covered on this show. Porno Studio Tycoon.
Yep!
Developed and published by Zitrix Megalomedia. It released May 5th on Steam for $19.69.
Oh, God! They knew where they were going with it.
Porno Studio Tycoon is a business simulator with a rich economic model, markets with shortages and surpluses, websites with black hat SEO, etc., flexible configuration of movie production, complex casting, two modes of shooting, fast and detailed, and other features, beautiful graphics, and no sexually explicit content. So this sounds like, despite the name, it sounds like a pretty hardcore sim title. Pernell, what'd you think?
Well, first I want to flat out say that the game probably would have been helped by hardcore nudity, but it did not have any. So I was like, okay, this could be pretty good for the sake of, you know, what it's trying to be, which is a tycoon-style game. But even though I believe there's a lot of potential in the game as a whole, especially if I really sit down and like try to stick my hands in it outside of what the game explains to you and lets you get work with, but my time with the game was kind of frustrating, actually. So I guess the best way to lead into it would be to say that the way the game works is it starts you off with a sort of tutorial where you are talking to, I guess, a porn star, basically, and she's like, hey, you want to talk about how to make movies? And you're like, yeah. Of course, they throw a lot of, like, you know, double entendre speaking there. It's like, you don't have the stones for my moxie or whatever nonsense I can't come up with here. So they'll go through this exploration about, okay, here's how you make a movie. Oh, she'll talk to you about the first aspect of the game, which is that you have to actually hire actors and actresses to star in your films. And the actors and actresses have various things about them that factor into what makes them work for your film. And these are the sorts of things I actually thought the game had that were awesome. Like, for example, there are various men and women that come from different countries. So their nationalities plus their race and their looks come into play. And they outright tell you, depending on the country you're watching this in, they might be considered ugly there, but over here they're pretty hot. So you might want to think about that as far as where your movie's going to be broadcast. So they have that. They have various talents. So, but they broke them down to different categories like vanilla, gonzo, romance, foreplay, one called woohoo, which I don't even freaking know what that's supposed to be, but whatever. And basically, like, you know, they have like a small resume where they kind of say, this is what I like to do, blah, 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 hire me, I'll work anywhere. But one thing that I thought was funny, and the lady says this, though, and I think it may come up early on in the game, but I didn't really deal with it. But apparently they can lie on their resumes. So you can get a person who's saying that they're willing to do anything, and then you cast them into like some kind of really freaky shit, and they completely flub up the scene. But for the most part, you are given a base set of descriptors for a person, their skill sets, their strengths, and their resume. And you have to choose who you want to hire for your movie, guys and girls. Then you have to actually rent a location for where you want to shoot the film. So you go to the want ads, and essentially it's like a list of locations that are up for rent, like a penthouse or a condo or an apartment, various different places that ultimately have various effects on your movie, like, you know, the environment or like a place where you can set up people to actually do scenes, to have scenes filmed. After that, you then have to bring up, I know you're like, man, I was expecting more dirty talk. You're talking about actual sim shit. But no, it's a sim. So after that, you're now in the place you're filming at. You got to come across a film crew. You have to come across, like, basically a cameraman, a lighting guy, and a director. But at the beginning of the game, you're usually too poor to do those things with hiring. So you usually have to kind of do double duty. Like, you might have to be the cameraman and the editor. So you hire these different people, and they all have their own skill sets, too, that factor into what their actual talents are, which I thought was also pretty cool. And once you've done all that, you then have to place the actors on the scene and then determine what type of work they're going to do. And this is where I kind of got a good chuckle, because they don't outright say verbally in words what they're doing. Like, they're not saying, do you want me to give a blowjob here? Do you want me to do missionary here? Oh, no, no, no. They try to get odd about it. So, for example, there's a drink cup with a mouth on it. and a straw. I guess that's supposed to mean a blowjob. I don't. But they try to keep it classy with cups. So they have things like that, which you use to designate, okay, this is the kind of work they're going to do in this scene. And then you kind of, once you select that, you go through the process of telling them to, you know, take action, and they'll go about the process of filming. Now, during the tutorial, she goes, well, we can just automate that. So just go up in the upper left corner and click the time icon to speed things up. So you do that, and it pretty much blows through the scene, and it records the scene. But, you know, she's like, well, this is what happens when you get, you know, a minimal experience without actually putting work into the scene, and I'll tell you why later. And, of course, your movie bombs after you go through editing and stuff, which is also automated through the tutorial. So it's like, if you want to do a really good movie, you have to actually go through the effort of going through the work yourself. Awesome times, right? So you got to start the official game. Select new game. They have different settings to configure your play experience, such as do you want the ability to have auto-run scenes like they tell you in the tutorial. But you can't do that until you beat the game for the first time. They make you do everything. But the tutorial doesn't explain how to do everything. So you're stuck with being taught a mentality that the game doesn't expect you to use until you've already beaten the game. So I was kind of bored by that, and it was kind of annoying to me. But I was like, oh, whatever, I'll figure it out, I'll get into the game. So you do that, and after you select that option, they then go to a screen where you have to kind of configure your main character. So you have to name yourself, you name the studio that you work for, and then you have to distribute skill points across a number of various traits. So there could be things like, you know, director ability, analysis ability, like a number of different things, like cameraman ability, in case you want to do the cameraman work yourself, director's ability, all these different things. And then there's also a skills line that has all the different stuff I was talking about before, like the drink cup, a lot of different position silhouettes. So it's like, hey, if you want your person to be able to do like a reverse pile driver in the butt, hey, you got the skill set for that. Make it work. but you have to distribute the skill points to properly allocate these things. But
shit, they
don't outright tell you what that skill bar even is. You just have to kind of assume that this is you saying, okay, I can have a film where these guys are doing, like, you know, purple monkey dishwasher shit. But if I'm not skilled enough in the form, I can't direct people to take it in the nostril. So it's really odd that they would do that, but that's their intent. Though, funny enough, on the first time trying to do this, I couldn't make the game start because apparently the game glitched and the actual press start to go button was not on my screen. So I had to reset the entire game after going on the internet and asking around, like, hey, looking to see if anybody had the same problem, and nobody mentioned it. I was like, it must not be a big issue, so I'll go back and try again. When I reloaded the game, now the button was there, so I could start the game.
Oh my lord. I'm like trying so hard to not laugh while you're talking just because I get like a little bit of feedback from I don't know if you're on speaker or what, but I'm trying so hard to not laugh at this review.
Well, I'm glad to hear it's actually funny because it definitely needs to be, because the game itself, like I said, I felt kind of lacking in it. Well, I mean, one last thing I got to mention about the before you start the game proper. There's also, at the eventual part, the last thing you can choose is the difficulty setting, like easy, medium, and hard. And that difficulty setting determines what type of goods you get. So you might have, like, it involves like your starting salary, or your starting, like, you know, money you can run the game with, number of fans you've got, the profitability factor, like I guess how it determines the scope of what's profitable and what's not, you know. The motivational decrease, and what that means is while people are doing scenes, the more you work them without, like, you know, giving them breaks or, you know, just kind of treating them right as employees, their motivation actually goes down, which means their performance goes down too. You don't need any flaccid stars on this set, so you got to keep that motivation up, and on the higher difficulties, flaccid's all around. So. But, and the speed of the game, too, because there's an actual clock that takes place that determines, you know, what day is it, you know, how long is it, how long do you have to wait between different sets and filmings and things of that nature. So that also factors in, too. But once the game starts proper, they just kind of slap you with a massive map of the globe, and you are then stuck with having to figure out, what do I want to freaking do now? I don't fucking know. So my first thought was, go back to the agency to hire some people. And the way you, when you go to the agency, in order to get, you know, stars that you can hire, like I mentioned earlier, you have to buy a star, a list of talent from an agency. And the higher the cost, the better the talent. So if you drop like $1,000 on a name list, you're going to get like basically toilet trash people of the industry. You know, I found this woman working in a back alley. She'll work for, you know, old Krusty Burgers or some shit. And then the other aspect of it, the higher, then you might get like, you know, the higher end stars, like, you know, the Brandy Loves or what the fuck ever is hot in this day and age in the scene. But of course, I'm broke, so I'm paying for the low talent. But I did that, and then they gave me a list of people. And then I was like, okay, I'm still following the tutorial. I did that. Time to go buy, you know, rent a place to film a scene. So I rented a location to film a scene, and I chose a name for the movie. You know, Up Chuck in the Butt was the name I chose. Then I couldn't do the auto scene filming, so I had to figure out the way the damn game worked, which is when you choose a scene, there is a cell phone icon within a circle that is just sitting there. I don't know what the fuck it's doing. I don't know why it's doing it. I guess it's implying that you're so broke that you're filming a porn movie on your cell phone. But whatever. So then as I scroll the mouse over, it immediately jumps into this huge console, which looks nothing like a cell phone. And I have to, I guess, slide dials to make sure that the image is clear. And while this is all going on, this implied that they're having sex, but the words that they're actually saying on the screen are like, this is awesome, or, well, this is a can of worms, or just dumb shit that has nothing to do with having a sex scene. I'm trying my hardest. Weird shit. But this is what they're actually doing while you're actually trying to go about this scene. And then you can press the order the pizza button, which I'm not making up, by the way. No. You can press the order a pizza button to order pizza to raise porn star morale. Because apparently these guys run on pizza as opposed to Dunkin'. Then, you know, eventually through a lot of fumbling, because again, I had no idea what the fuck I was doing for most of the filming because the tutorial didn't explain any of it. And it's a very cryptic wording of how things go in this game. I jumbled, stumbled through a film, and then I had to go to the editing room where I had no idea what the fuck to do. So I just paid a guy to do minimal editing work because whatever. And then my film came out, and I made very little money and was expected to do it again. And I said, I don't think I want to do this again because I'm not feeling this right now. I'm just not in the mood. And I gave this game a good, like, 3 attempts. And it honestly never clicked with me in that regard. Now, don't get me wrong. I feel like if I were just kind of putzing around on the game and there was like no time issues or anything like that, and I was really invested in wanting to make a porn, a dynamic porn empire, I could have probably gotten some work out of this game. But what this review is definitely meant to clarify is that while it has a number of aspects to it that make it work as well as a tycoon game, like it even has an analysis aspect where you can kind of analyze what region, what types of movies are doing well in what regions and stuff like that. But as a game, a tycoon game that's meant to kind of guide you into how it works and not make you sit on your laurels wondering, quite frankly, how the fuck does this work? I think Porn Studio Tycoon fails at that. So I'm not sure how I feel about it. I'd want to say try it because I'm not going to lie. Hacky as the game ended up being, there was a nice little aspect to the fact that it was actually trying to give you a serious impression, semi-serious impression, of how the porn studio industry worked. And instead of saying, well, it's not all, you know, sunshine and farts and queefs and whatever dirty shit is going through your mind. It's not all that. Sometimes they need pizza too. And they make sure that you get that impression firsthand. So I feel like this
farts
game
and queefs.
All those things. That's what the industry runs on sometimes. I think it works
holy
on that stuff
shit.
Too. So this game, I think, is worth a try, especially with that 1969 price and sales probably popping off here and there down the line. I definitely recommend it as a tryable. Laugh at the freaking drink cup meaning to imply a blowjob. Because, Jesus. It's like they expect you to be mature enough. That's the other thing I got to mention. They expect you to be mature enough to buy a game called Porn Studio Tycoon. But they could just flat out say, is your director skilled enough to distribute, to issue the command to give blowjobs on screen? Oh, no. They got to say, hey, do you like drinking cups with a mouth on the label?
because we got those, which I can't even. Just say the damn words. Hell, a kid playing the game wouldn't even know what missionary is. He'd just go, it's some church thing. You go overseas and distribute pizza to hungry orphans. That sounds good.
Holy shit. Missionary.
my guy should totally be good with missionary. Give him that, you know. But they just kind of take it for granted and give you drinking cups and silhouettes. So,
all right. Well, moving on, we're gonna do a complete 180. And the next game to talk about that you're gonna tell us about is called Farming Simulator 18.
Christ on a bike.
Developed by Giant Software, published by Focus Home Interactive, it released June 6th on PlayStation Vita and 3DS for $29.99. Become a modern farmer in Farming Simulator 18. Immerse yourself in a huge open world and harvest many types of crops. Take care of your livestock, cows, sheep, and pigs. Take part in forestry and sell your products on a dynamic market to expand your farm. You have access to a huge selection of over 50 farming vehicles and machines faithfully recreated from over 30 of the biggest names in the industry. Drive and use brand new equipment and harvest sugar beets, potatoes, wheat, canola, corn, and for the first time ever, sunflowers. So we're going from deflowering to
reflowering.
This might be my favorite back-to-back review I've ever had on this show. So Purnell, tell us about Farming Simulator.
Well, before I even go into the game, I gotta lead this off with a funny thing that coincidentally happened a couple days ago. So I'm at a party, hanging out with some people, and as the party lets out, the host of the party invites me to check out his Steam collection, because we're all video gamers and stuff. He runs me down the list of stuff he's got, and I'm like, ticking off things, blah, 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 and then I notice he owns Farming Simulator 14, 15, 16, and 17. And wow. I go, whoa, are you a fan of these Farming Simulator games? And he goes, nah, funny thing, actually, there's a guy in our game group who thinks it's a fun joke that every year when Farming Simulator comes out, he buys a brand new copy for everybody in the group, even though we all tell him we'll never boot them up. So this guy is giving the studio free money. Free full-price ducat. I'm like, well, at this point, you may as well at least play the game, because I'm going to review number 18 this coming week. Well, maybe you'll like it. But I just thought it was kind of funny that there's a guy out there like dropping like, I know if the game's retailing like, for example, $20 or something, this guy is dropping like $80, not including maybe for himself, on every new release, just because.
Good God.
But the game itself, before I go, the one thing I want to mention, that the tagline I came up with when I was done with my review was pretty much, this game needs to be in every school in America to tutorialize kids to understand just what kind of bullshit the farming culture, the Agriculture Society of America goes through to get us food, get us grain, and whatever else. Because, oh my God, this game is not a bad game, but it is fucking slow. Like, you know how sometimes they say to make the truest recreation of something, they have to go about giving it the pluses and the minuses. They have to display it for all it's worth, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what this game does. So you start out with like two fields, or rather three fields, and you have to pretty much, the guy kind of gives you a brief understanding of like what equipment does, but you ultimately have to kind of do it for yourself. So I started out the game, and I'm pretty much like, I'm harvesting wheat, and then I take it to market to sell. But what that actually entails, like think of it this way, Harvest Moon, if you were to say, hey, what do you do to get wheat? You'd go, okay, Harvest Moon, I have to buy some seeds from town. But while I'm in town, I'm going to hang out with the shopkeep and set up a potential social link with the cute girl behind the counter selling flowers. And then I go home, drop some seeds, maybe water it twice, and then just run around with like a freaking hack, like a sickle, and start killing shit. Harvest Moon, everybody. In this game, you actually have to drive a ridiculously slow vehicle, attach another device to that vehicle, said device being, oh my God, a cultivator. The cultivator is used to run over, you know, tilled fields to prepare them for, you know, for seeding, essentially. Then after that, you have to actually sew it with another vehicle. So remove the one device, attach another device, and then drive over the fields again to populate the field with seedlings. Then let the clock run its course. It takes a couple of days. If there's a speed modifier, I don't know what it is. I didn't find it. When that's done, you'd have to drive a ridiculously slow combine harvester over the wheat to take it down to eventually prep it to be towed to market or towed to a silo for storage. These are things that I was doing throughout this game, and eventually I started doing with other crops such as corn. So it revolved me driving these slow vehicles to different facilities, which one thing I do like, mind you, is when you do harvest a crop, there are various locations around town that will buy it from you, and depending on the time of year, they will offer you, all of them will offer you different prices, so you can kind of play the market to decide, hey, this will be a perfect opportunity to either A, grow the crop, or take some crop that you've been storing in your silos and get it out to sell to somebody, because now it's going to be more profitable to your farm. So it is a very slow process, though I won't lie also, even though I was getting kind of sleepy playing it, there was something kind of nice about it. It was very, like, relaxing work. Like, you just sat down and you just harvested a field, and you could hire workers to do stuff for you. So, and you will hire workers. Cheapskate's not allowed in this bad boy. So I didn't want to actually hire anybody because I'm a cheap ass. But as time progressed, things took forever to get done, and I had more things I wanted to do. Like, I wanted to tend to another field. I eventually wanted to start harvesting some grass to feed cows. I had to actually go through the process of, you know, push just a button you can press where you can hire an employee to do the work that you started, so you can kind of move on to a different device and move along. So this is what you do pretty much throughout the entire game. You grow things, you harvest things, then you actually clear the things up off the ground to prepare to grow something new, and you sell it. You can buy new equipment as well, though, as you rake in more money, whether from harvesting crops or selling cattle or livestock or from something else, which I'll get into in a few minutes. You can eventually amass enough money to buy either new vehicles, which I'll admit, you mentioned it earlier, but I was kind of curious about it, and I'm glad you said it. I didn't realize these were actually real brands. But they're all real branded vehicles. So you go to the shop, the guy's like, hey, here are all the different devices you can buy. You can buy, you know, pickup trucks for, you know, easier transport. You can pick up tippers, sowers, you know, harvesters, all sorts of different improved vehicles to, you know, further improve your actual work on the farm. And you can also purchase more land in the town that you play the game in, so you can have different fields around the town to do more work. And in true farming fashion, actually, you don't, all your fields are not in one collected area. They're actually spread about the town. So as you buy more fields, you have to get vehicles maybe set up in different places. Because if you drove the same sets of vehicles to every farm you had set up or every field set up, it would take forever because the vehicles are slow and they require gasoline, which you have to buy at the local gas station, driving the vehicle to the gas station. Which, by the way, driving a harvester to the gas station can kiss my ass. That shit's awful. I felt guilty paying a guy to do it, but it sucked. But I did like those aspects of the game, surprisingly enough. And then one last thing that came up in the game is that the guy, basically the tutorial man, I'll just call him. I also call him Jethro as I played the game so I could yell at somebody. Damn it, Jethro! But he'll occasionally ask you to do some missions for him, which will yield benefits. And I thought it was hilarious that you mentioned sunflowers earlier as being a first, because the first mission he gave me was to transport sunflowers for him to a harbor. Now, one thing I thought was funny was he says, hey, I have a trailer full of sunflowers, sunflower seeds. Could you transport these to the harbor? And I said, sure, dude. But I assumed that the trailer would be on my farm. I'd have to go collect it and move or get it from the silo or something like that. Oh, no. I had to go to the map and learn what an icon represented for the trailer, because the game doesn't explain to you there's no legend explaining what the icons mean. I just had to figure out that one of the blinking dots on my screen, or not blink, one of the colored dots on my screen referred to a trailer with sunflower seeds at the gas station, not on my damn farm. So the guy supposedly acquired this trailer, but didn't have the wherewithal to have it sent to his damn farm. He makes you go get it from a gas station. Whatever. So I got the sunflower seeds and transported them down to the harbor, or rather I paid a mook to do it, And then I got additional money, not just for the transport, but also for the mission entirely. So you can get more money sometimes by fulfilling missions. And you're going to need that money, too, because if you intend to expand your farm or do anything along those lines, additional fields cost a crap load of money. Like, I came, fields were costing $100,000, $250,000, $200,000. The average vehicle for working on the farm is about $75,000, you know, $50,000. Crazy-ass prices. And then you think about the fact that we're going to the grocery store bitching about bread not being on sale. It blew my mind. Like, I had an ex-girlfriend who, her dad is a farmer in the freaking, like, in, like, Podunkburg, basically. And some of the stories I would hear her tell me was like, okay, well, they make decent money, I guess. I mean, for all, considering how important agriculture is, blah, blah, blah. But then playing this game, if it's anywhere even remotely close to being as boring as this game can feel, as long as you're not in it for, if you're in it for relaxation, you're all right. If you're in it for some sort of action or being pushed, you're going to fall the fuck asleep. And if their work is anything like that, they deserve all the goddamn kudos and accolades and Skittles and Starburst they can get, because that shit is tedious.
Well, to be fair, if someone's picking up a game called Farming Simulator, I'm going to assume that either they've already played some games in the series and they know what they're expecting, or they're at least expecting some kind of simulator game based around farming.
Oh, no, no, I agree with you 100%. It's a game where, like I mentioned earlier, the best simulators are ones that typically are ones that give you the good and the bad. And by good, I mean authentic farming gameplay. The bad being authentic farming gameplay. So you gotta, if you're coming into it with that expectation, then you're in for a treat, because they do take care of you and they give you all the tools at your disposal to actually be a decent farmer. And there's upgrades available to the farm, there's upgrades to your equipment, things of that nature that makes it worthwhile to you. But for any just rando person, I think it'd be interesting for them to play just to get that feeling of what it's like to do farming. Because think about it. Most people that think about farming simulators now, they think about Harvest Moon. Mm-hmm. Harvest Moon is not farming. It's not. Harvest Moon is talking with wood sprites in the woods, asking them to do the work for you while you go play at a damn stream and wishing that the damn girl from the freaking general store would take you to this hot cop dance on Friday the 13th. I don't know. And then you have a family with them, but your kids can't do any freaking farm because they're lazy bastards or whatever. The point is, Harvest Moon is not farming. Farming Simulator is farming. And more people who like Harvest Moon, because they claim to like farming, need to play Farming Simulator to get the real sense of what farming is all about. So, I would say, I'm going to break it up into two here. If you are a fan of genuine farming simulation, and you're okay with all that farming has to bring, I would recommend this as a buy it, because it definitely does a good job of providing you with a leisurely SimCity-esque take on the world of farming. It is a good game in that regard. If you are looking for something actiony, if you are looking for something that's going to kick you on the edge of your seat, pissing your pants with glee, deny it.
If you're looking for a hardcore action game and you picked up Farming Simulator 18, I think you got some fucking problems.
Oh my god, I can't wait to grow this corn!
Gonna harvest the shit out of this sunflowers. Yeah! I know the farming sim games have been getting a pretty big cult following lately. There's a lot of streamers out there who've been doing a lot of farming sim playthroughs, and just, it seems like it's a fun, chill game. It's clearly not going to be an action-packed thrill fest. You're not going to go into cover shooting to hide from the sheep with fucking machetes or something. But it sounds like a really enjoyable, relaxing experience if that's what you're looking for.
But now that you mention it, I think they could do well to diversify their revenues by adding a second mode. I mean, Call of Duty did zombies, right? Why not have, you know, duck and cover farm apocalypse mode and farming simulator? I mean, it makes logical sense.
Zombie cows.
Hey, you got to get Betsy out of the barn before the infected pigs come in and infect the cows.
Zombie wheat plants. Fuck yeah.
It could be like Plants versus Zombies, but on an actual farm.
Oh, man. Well, it sounds fun, and we've had you cover titty sims and farming sims. I guess there's only one other direction left to go.
Murder sims?
Yeah. Your last game to talk about today is called Cryptarch. Developed and published by Alien Trap, it released June 20th on Steam for $14.99, June 27th on the PS4. Cryptarch is a 2D sci-fi shooter where you take on the role of a heavily armed privateer seeking to earn government contracts by boarding deadly alien space hulks. It's up to you to strategize a plan of attack, pick an equipment loadout, and destroy the central core to be victorious. This sounds absolutely nothing like the other two games you've covered. So, Purnell, what is Cryptarch?
First thing I gotta say is this game actually has a surprising amount in common with Porn Studio Tycoon.
What?
It really does. I mean,
you get to blow your everywhere. Load
all over the screen. And by that, I mean your loadout. Terrible joke. But whatever. The point is, this game is actually pretty cool. I like it. I got a lot of similarities to a game I reviewed for you prior called Flint Hook, actually, as well. So, the way this game works is there's multiple modes, but I only played two of them because others require unlocking. The first one is campaign mode. And the way campaign mode works is they start you off on like a sort of tutorial ship, and the person kind of explains the game to you, like, this is how you go about exploring ships, blah, blah, blah. I'll get to explain the game myself in a minute. And then after you do that tutorial, they give you an option of choosing four different ships. And each ship has different, has a different code name, which may imply, different obstacles you'll face within the ship. Like the one that stood out to me the most, because some of these descriptions didn't make a load of sense to me, and I think a lot of them will become more apparent as you play the game more. But Ghost implied that you couldn't even see the map of the ship because it had a jammer on board, and you had to break the jammer to actually get the map of the ship to display. I like that a lot. But there's different components, like a difficulty level, the number of sentries on the ship, the number of turrets on the ship, and various components to the core. And what do I mean by components to the core? Well, when you start the game, you have to board the ship and locate whether it's new armaments to, outfit your ship to, to have different types of attacks, or keys to unlock various doors within the ship, or finding the core. However, if you go right after the core, you're asking to get your ass beat, because the way they designed this game is that the core is being guarded or assisted by multiple aspects of the ship. One being a shuffler, for example. And what the shuffler will do is every, say, 75 seconds, it will switch the location of every component on the ship. So you might be shooting at the core thinking you got some action shit going on. Boom! Time clicks, it just disappears and goes somewhere else. And you have no clue where it went. But of course, if you destroy the shuffler, stuff stops moving around. There's also an alarm facet where if you go attack the core before you dismantle the alarm, it'll call tons of enemies to come after you while you're attacking the core, which can make for a very frustrating experience. Another thing that I came across was a shield generator, which of course shielded the core, which made it harder to take out unless you destroyed the shield core. So your optimal design is to go after each of these components and destroy them before going after the core. But on this difficulty, on the campaign mode, there are time limits to get to the end of the ship because apparently your benefactor wants you to get these jobs done quickly and efficiently, which was really bad for me. I got the shit kicked out of every ship I went on because I wanted to be slow and methodical, and the game wasn't having that because I had to do it in 5 minutes. Further compounded by the fact that there are submissions on each trip that will give you bonus money if you complete them, like never using one of your shield items or using a certain number of type of guns, or I don't know, maybe unlocking a certain number of doors. Just different things that augment your experience that are meant to give you a challenge that it rewards you with more money. Now, the way you get an outright bona fide game over in this game is so. Every time you take out a ship or fulfill a mission, you get money. Every time you actually disembark to go on a mission, it costs you money based on the loadout you put on your ship, how much energy you give your ship to take hits. And I think there's also just a flat-out recovery cost if you die and have to get brought back to, like, your home base ship. So if you lose enough times and not recuperate the funds by discovering artifacts on ships or by taking out ships and things of that nature, you will ultimately end up going bankrupt and the company will terminate your contract. And that will be the end of your campaign mode run. I never beat a single ship in campaign mode because fuck that noise. I'm terrible at games that really push me like that, though I want to try again. But the other mode was where I was a Viking, and that is the rogue difficulty, or rogue mode. And the way rogue mode works is you choose a loadout at the beginning of your game, and you unlock new loadouts based on collecting a certain number of artifacts. So for, like, you know, get two artifacts, you can unlock this guy that has a flamethrower. You lock this guy with four artifacts that has like a rocket launcher built into his default set. And unlike the other difficulty, you don't get to choose the ship you board. They tell you the ship you're going to board, and you go. What I also noticed, and I'm not sure if it's these types of ships unlock later on in the campaign mode, but the ships on Rogue were a lot larger than the ones in campaign, but there was no time limit to get through the ships. So I could be slow and methodical and kick ass as I saw fit. So I pretty much did a lot better job on that mode, and I was able to get through a couple levels in that game and enjoy myself. So in this game mode, it's the same gameplay style, which is destroy the core. There is items that you can find on the ship that will allow you to outfit your guy with new weapons, and you can switch them. So to give you an idea here, right bumper, left bumper, left bumper, and left trigger. I just said some weird fucked up shit. Let me get that right. Right bumper, right trigger, left bumper, left trigger. Four different buttons. Each of those buttons corresponds to an armament that you can configure with your ship. And when you find a new, you know, wet loadout item, you can switch one of your currently equipped items off to that. And a beautiful thing for people like me who are really indecisive and don't want to get rid of stuff, when you make the switch, you don't lose the thing you got rid of. It just stays on that you know, basically that equip station. So as long as you didn't beat the ship, you can like take the item you just got and use it to full effect and then go back and get the old item off the rack and then keep progressing as you need to. I've actually really appreciated that aspect of the game. And in addition to weapons, there's also like sub items like healing kits. And for the record, on that other mode, some of the missions is to never use a repair kit. So fuck that noise. But you can get repair kits and like emergency shields and stuff like that as you can equip on the cross pad. And that works the same way. You push the cross pad button to exhaust the item and you're good. So I honestly found this game to be really hard, but also really fun. It's very fast paced. Enemies come at you like crazy. It's almost like nonstop waves. Even though the game tells you how many sentries are on a ship and how many drones are on a ship, I feel like there's definitely some of the core items on the ship that will generate more or something like that. Because there were definitely times where, like, out of nowhere, like five or six guys would just bum rush me, and I'm like freaking the hell out trying to boost out of the way of all of them. And there's a boost button. I should have mentioned that. It's a fun game, though. Like, you know when they say a truly fun game is one that you keep wanting to give one more try to, regardless of whether or not you suck at it? This game is that. I gave it a lot of tries. On that campaign mode, you would think by me telling you that I never beat a single ship on campaign mode, you would think that meant, well, clearly, Pernell tried this game twice and then put it down. I gave it at least 16 tries.
Oh, wow.
Just could not beat a damn ship because I was trying to rush to the ship because the clock was like, you know, teasing me, taunting me, and I would get myself killed because I wasn't, you know, being slow and steady like I should have been. Whereas rogue mode, I had the luxury of doing that and I performed way, way better. So also, well, I guess one reason why I was having a lot of difficulty with the game, and I should mention this, though this might just be my poor play skills, is that aiming the gun was not very easy to do. Like, I always felt like I was slightly off on my shots. And when you have some of the core items where you have to shoot a specific dot between two barrier walls, that can be really fucking frustrating to deal with. And it'd end up being me just dropping grenades and hoping he landed within, like, the little crevice and then running away. But I was really bad at aiming the machine gun and heavily relied on explosive items and an item that you get called the ram spike, which is like a direct melee attack. You can just dash into guys and rip them apart. I abused that, which probably resulted in me taking more damage than I should have. But I will say that this game, I think, is awesome. I was enjoying the hell out of it, and it seems like it even has like a pretty stable community starting to grow from it. Like, people that talk about the game. So I would give it a buy. It's a legitimate title, and this is one of those games where I feel like if when I find more free time, I can see myself going back to it outside of the review scope and playing it some more.
Nice. It looked good, and I kind of want to pick it up myself on PS4. Although I wish it was on Xbox, developers.
Well, on the positive, I mean, it's available in, at least in a different way. You can get it on Steam or on the PS4, though I admit I'd rather have it on PS4.
Yeah, that's just how I roll. If I have to pick between those two, I'm going PlayStation, just because I fucking hate gaming on my computer.
Same here. I'm getting a little better at it since I started doing these Steam reviews, though, because I just started using the TV mode, and once I get the game running, it's running on my Xbox controller, so. But prior to that, it's like, oh, I gotta be at my computer setting this crap if I don't feel like it. I just want to sit on the couch. But I'm sure somebody listening would go, you plebe, obviously, if you did it the right way, you wouldn't be doing all these things. And to you, I say, come configure it at my house and then stop taunting me. That's all I gotta say about that. But yeah, I think the game is legit. It's a worthy purchase. And I think that trigger-happy fanatics will really get a kick out of it because it definitely makes you, you know, freak out when certain things happen on the screen between laser shots and who the hell knows, alarms going off and trip wires, and it's nutty. It's a very nutty game.
Sounds good. Well, Pernell, thank you as always for covering these games for us. Do you have anything to wrap everything up and sum it all up?
Thank you, Farmers of America, for what you do. And thank you for making it so that I can get Wonder Bread or strawberry flavored, you know, whatever that brand is, Stromatussin. I don't know what that brand is, but whatever it is. Thank you for making it possible for me to get strawberry bread on my table every morning for breakfast.
Next game to talk about is called Serious Sam's Bogus Detour, developed by Crackshell and Crow Team, published by Devolver Digital, released June 20th on Steam for $14.99. Battle through beautiful Mediterranean locales, dangerous biological weapon labs, and even high-tech moon bases as a one-man wrecking crew or in a four-player online co-op for maximum chaos. Dominate the chaotic survival and versus modes, or make your own mods, modes, and even total conversions with the included game editor. Serious Sam's Bogus Detour is the biggest little Serious Sam game ever made. Brought in our friend Tom Miller to cover this one. Tom, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing just swell, thank you.
How's your holiday weekend going?
It's good. You know, I don't really have anything going on, but, you know, I'm going to probably check out some 4th of July stuff when that happens, and I'm not working, so that's cool by me.
Nice. My cat just sat in a box that was halfway off of the couch, and she fell all the way off the couch, so that was fun to watch. That happened live.
Man.
So.
It's just like, yeah.
Tell me about Serious Sam's Bogus Detour.
Yeah, so I was actually just playing it for a little while earlier this afternoon, and I like it a lot, actually. It's another twin-stick shooter. Last time I was on here, I did Ex Machina, so I'm like the twin-stick shooter guy right now. But
we all have our roles.
Yeah, I will not complain about that one. Because it's really well done, and... So this is the first time I've ever played a Serious Sam game. So I knew of it, and I knew sort of what to expect as far as like the tone and level design and stuff were just like waves of like 1,000 guys that you're fighting at once. And then you just like, you know, shoot a giant, like 10-foot cannonball at them. And it just has like this ridiculous sense of humor to it. And I love that. I can't stand it when games take themselves too seriously. Especially shooters. It's really beautiful. It's like all of the pixel art is super well done. There's a lot of detail. As you're going through the levels, there is a just the amount of little touches that they put in. They have like, you know, townspeople running around as you're going through the city, and just like little bits of destructible terrain and everything. I don't know. There's a lot of thought put into the art design. The music's really cool, too. It has, like, this sort of synthy thing going on, and there's some really cool, like, synth textures in the background, like, very 80s, like, John Carpenter-style things going on. So I love that. And, yeah, all in all, like, it's a really just a fun game. It doesn't take itself too seriously, and it just focuses on being enjoyable.
Well, I would hope a Serious Sam game doesn't take itself too seriously.
Yeah, no kidding. I guess, like, the one main complaint that I have is, like, the levels are... Okay, so the levels are huge, which is great, but also there's no mapping feature, and that can be a little problematic because you're traversing these gigantic levels, and, you know, there's so much, like, hunting around for a key or, like, trying to figure out where you have and haven't been yet, and it's just kind of... It gets a little disorienting sometimes. That would be pretty much my main issue with it. That and the fact that there are minefields in a lot of places where you kind of have to, like, tiptoe your way around, which kind of, you know, for a game that's that usually tries to be really fast-paced, I feel like it kind of cuts into it a little bit. But they do use it in some cool ways. There are these guys who run at you with bombs held over their head, screaming at the top of their lungs, and you fight, like, groups of, like, 30 of them at once. It is great. The sound design is so perfect. it's just like, ah! And, but they can run into the minefields as well. So, like, I don't know. I feel like there was a lot of thought put into it. You know, it just does kind of break up the gameplay a little bit in a way that I don't really care for. But, like, the other 95% of the game is good times, mostly.
Yeah. Which is a positive.
Oh, yeah. Gotta have those good times.
Have you dabbled with the online or the game creator at all?
Unfortunately, I wasn't really able to. Like, the times that I was playing it, I didn't see anybody else in the lobby, so I wasn't really able to check that out. It looks just so hectic, and I'm sure it would just be a lot of fun if you get a group of people together, especially playing it four player. And then there's the deathmatch stuff too, which unfortunately I wasn't able to check out. I didn't see, but like just from seeing the footage of it that I have, I mean, it looks like if you're a fan of really, this game feels like a first-person shooter from a different camera angle, and I feel like, you know, if you're into, I guess probably Serious Sam, because it is a game in that series, then probably both the single-player and like, Deathmatch and stuff you'd probably feel right at home. And I didn't play around with the level editor much. There is already some stuff up there. And I haven't really looked around the Steam Workshop, but that's something I'm really looking forward to seeing because the game has so many cool resources to it. I'm sure people could put together some really nice, like, alternate campaigns. And it even does have, like, an alternate campaign that is included with the game that's mostly just, like, arena-style fighting, more of a Smash TVs type of thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks pretty awesome. I know the developers, Crackshell, their previous game, what the hell was the name of it?
Hammerfall,
that's it. That was really good. And I'm hearing a lot of people say this is basically Hammerfall with Serious Sam and guns and crazy over-the-top blood.
Yeah. Oh, there is definitely a lot of over-the-top blood, for sure.
Which pretty much everything. Always a positive.
Blood. Oh, totally, yeah.
Blood and destruction and chaos is always fun. So yeah, for $15, what are your thoughts on this one?
I think it's worth it, especially if you're a fan of either Serious Sam or just shooters in general. I think it's a lot of fun, and I definitely do recommend checking it out.
Sounds good. I gotta say, it's so fun going from Purnell, who does like 15 minutes per game for his reviews, to you, that we crack this out in like 8, 7, or 8. Streamline this shit. It's not.
I'm just a concise kind of guy. I don't know.
Sounds good. Well, anything to wrap this up?
Yeah, not so much. Hope everybody has a good holiday weekend, and or if you're not in a place where 4th of July is a holiday, still have a good 4th of July. And,
I mean, it already ended, so you can't wish anyone a good weekend.
Yeah,
when it's over.
I'm just
by the time this is out, it's Tuesday anyway, you know? Already.
Hey, I can right on.
Have a good Wednesday, I guess.
Yeah. I don't
All know right. That works.
We'll robocalled.
We'll go with that. So have a good Wednesday, everyone.
Have a good Wednesday.
All right, and the final game to talk about tonight is called God Wars Future Pass, developed by Kadokawa Games, published by NIS America, released June 20th on PS4 for $49.99. God Wars Future Pass is a tactical RPG that explores the untold history of Japan through folklore and tactical combat. We brought our friend Chris Taylor in to cover this one. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I was briefly confused because apparently... I guess your notes there say that it's the hidden history of Japan, but I think it's like an alternate fictional Japan. They call it.
I'm just going off what the PlayStation Store says.
They call it Mizuho, and I'm not sure. Yeah. So.
All right, if something's up, I blame Sony for that one. I just go with the description off the store and. That's what I do. I'm lazy.
Oh, yeah. Well...
So what is God Wars Future Past?
Well, besides a grammatical disaster, it is a strategy RPG in the vein of that most famous of strategy RPGs, Final Fantasy Tactics.
Ooh.
Yeah. It takes place in some place that I guess is literally really Japan, back when it was made of Legos. And in the Fuji Nation, which I guess has to do with Mount Fuji. There is a Mount Fuji in the game, but it's a volcano. Is Mount Fuji really a volcano?
It could be.
I guess it could be. I really don't know a whole lot about Japan, and I don't think this game was a very good teacher. The thing. But yeah, so this is basically a strategy RPG it's very old school, but they bring in some modern elements, such as anime cutscenes, like just fully animated and voice acted. In the opening, you see that the God Wars is basically there's a bunch of gods in this polygonal landscape, and they are angry. They want to have wars, and young girls that are very special have to be sacrificed. And the opening of the game is one such sacrifice from a mother who is basically like, I suppose she's the queen. I didn't really get that, but she was a. Either way, she's real high up, and she has to frag one of her own daughters in the volcano in order to appease the gods. And then 13 years later, you play the childhood friend of her other daughter, who is basically being kept in a shed until such time that she herself will be fragged. So you've got Kentaro, who is the leader of the game. I actually had to write down the names because I'm so bad at remembering them. And so it's Kentaro and Kaguya. And Kentaro is joined by one of many characters in the game that's basically a demigod in bear form. Which is, he's becoming one of my favorite characters, even though he only has one line, and it's, mm-hmm. it's Kuma.
Tim Allen?
Yeah, basically. Uh-huh. I mean, if Tim Allen was a bear with, like, a man bun and, like, samurai gear and was awesome. So, Kentaro and Kuma and Kaguya then go off in search of adventure and basically trying to unravel the mysteries of why these gods are so angry and if there's another way so that your main character doesn't have to get eaten by a volcano. And so, like Final Fantasy Tactics, it takes place on a big map of this apparently literally 100% real place called Mizuho, which is now known as Japan. And you travel from dot to dot on the map, like you do. And basically, you know, every new area is a new storyline. The storyline is really... I was quite enthralled. I don't want to go into too many details. I feel like I already have. You know, I don't like to talk about the stories too much, but like, things happen in every stage where it's just new things are introduced, all this lore is kind of dumped on you, and then, like, some bizarre thing happens out of left field, and then you have to go and kind of figure that out. And then you travel to the next place, and, you know, you just fight generic soldiers and stuff. So it's one of those, it's not like, like Legna Tactics, which I reviewed a few times ago, and Final Fantasy Tactics. It's not like realistic characters fighting against other humans in this kind of metaphor for war and destruction. It's more, the storyline is more JRPG. It's basically, you know, it involves gods and demigods and spirits and comical ghost gods who show up at some point. They're actually... They're the okay, so the lines in the storylines are all voice acted, and they have a group of ghost gods that you run into, and their voice actors are hamming it up because they're supposed to be slightly insane. So the voice actors took that note and ran with it. It's really fun. It's really funny to watch these spastic, like, insane gods. So it's one of those games, normally I skip the voice acting unless everybody sounds overtly British, which is like Xenoblade Chronicles or something.
Yeah.
Because then I enjoy that, but sometimes I just turn off voice acting. Don't turn off the voice acting in this game. Because it's very good. So the thing that, of course, in a strategy RPG, the thing you look for is, well, what are the mechanics of it? How much fun am I going to have, like, customizing characters and, like, what all is there to do? And that's, I think, where this game really shines. It's actually super in-depth. It features the job system, and it also features job trees, like skill trees, which is a lot like Etrian Odyssey. So if you master, like, you get to level 3 on one job, on one skill within a job, and then you build up to level 3 on the next one, that unlocks another skill that you can then dump some points into. And, of course, points are awarded separately for experience and for regular job points. And the great thing about this game, this is what I always look for, is that you can totally spam, like, really low-level magic or, you know, attacking an enemy and then healing the enemy, or letting them heal themselves, or, you know, inflicting status on yourself and then curing yourself in order to just sit there and farm points for, like, ever and ever. I was like, how long can I do this? So I actually spent 2 hours in one battle with with one soldier. No, it was a wolf. One wolf that was just wandering around trying to attack my weakest character, and all I was doing was just casting this endless loop of skills and building up points. Whereupon I totally gained, like, several levels on all these skills and stuff, and it was so satisfying. That's what I love doing in these games.
So you like to abuse the whole grinding for levels.
Yes, this game lets you abuse grinding. That's very important.
That's incredible.
Yes. And the good thing is that even though I abused the grinding points for hours and hours, I didn't even get close to the amount of stuff I could have unlocked. Like, there's so much. And so I really like that you get that ability to customize and, like, make your characters overpowered, and they don't, you know, scale the enemies way up to, like, catch up to you, because that actually became a problem in some of the Final Fantasy games. So yeah, as far as that goes, like, the mechanics are great. There's a side quest thing, which is also great. Basically, there are no real random battles in this game. So if you walk around the map, you're not going to just, like, randomly run into a 30-minute battle that's going to take you forever and you'll then forget where you were going. You go into the towns and you take on side quests for rewards. And then, you know, it'll send you immediately to where you need to go. You don't even have to find it on the map. And the cool thing is you can just do them over and over and over. There might be some that you can't do over, but definitely the first few I picked up, I was able to just sit there and spam them. So that's a good way to make your money and, like, you know, get your items. And it's got a good item system. It's just everything about like the busy parts, the menu-y parts, the mechanics of the game were very satisfying to me, somebody who likes to see too much.
Yeah.
But it never felt like too much, because every time, you know, even before I did that, when I was going into new battles, it's like, it's still, you know, you have to use that strategy to get through these things, because those fights can get pretty intense. So I was happy about that. Art-wise, game is fantastic. The backgrounds look great. I was looking at another review just now, because I was writing down the names, but and they were complaining about the dated graphics, and I'm like, it's a strategy RPG. Everything is supposed to look like blocks. You basically have gorgeous fields and you know, sandy looking mountains and like flowing rivers and stuff, but yes, it's all still in blocks.
Yeah, that's like bitching about the graphics in Minecraft.
Yeah,
everything is cube based. What the fuck do you expect?
Why would you complain about the graphics in Minecraft when like the creator of Minecraft is such a douche? You can complain about him. That's all you need to do. Seriously.
To be fair, he doesn't really have anything to do with the game anymore. So.
No, I mean, but he got his billions of dollars in this fedora, and then he started mansplaining his whole life. Became one of those MRAs, idiots.
Fucking fedora.
He needs to, like, just get Billy Corgan as a roommate or something, and they should just live their lives out in the palace somewhere and leave everyone else alone.
What the hell did Billy Corgan do?
The same thing.
Did he?
He's like, he's one of those MRA guys now.
Man, I've missed whatever went on with Billy. All I know with Billy Corgan is he tried to buy TNA Wrestling.
Oh yeah, that's right. Well, there you go.
But instead, he owns NWA Wrestling. He bought that instead.
Oh, okay. All right, great. Good for him. The world is a vampire indeed.
So,
speaking of which, God Wars. So. That brings me to my one and only complaint about the entire game. And it's not something I take lightly, nor is it something that I think will break the game for most people. But your hero is Kentaro, not the one from Mortal Kombat. This is a different Kentaro. And I think I got that right. Kentaro. Yeah. The thing is, so every character, like most modern RPGs, has a portrait that they use, like a full half-body portrait, right? Like the stomach on up, that they show whenever the character is talking, unless it's an animated cutscene. But in like the regular cutscenes, you see a still picture of the character. And the still picture of his character and the little thumbnail version with just his face, each time he's doing that thing that they do in animes, like male characters mostly, where he's just got his thumb stuck to the side of his nose. And the entire game that I played so far, this is several hours now, every time he talks or every time I have to choose him or whatever, even though his character sprite doesn't have it, he doesn't do it in the animated cutscenes at all, but his character portrait always has his thumb super glued to the side of his nose.
Were you telling me about this in another game?
No, it was this game. We were just chatting about this the other day.
Okay, all right. I was like, I know I had this conversation recently. Was it? It had to be with you.
Yeah.
I just couldn't remember if it was something for the show or off the record.
It was off the record. I've already complained to you about this.
Well, now it is officially on the record.
Officially on the record, and he's not a bad guy. He doesn't even act like he should have his thumb on the side of his nose. That's usually like an arrogant, like kind of a snarky sort of Joker character will do that, like when they're being falsely confident, or I guess being genuinely confident, but he's not. He's just a guy. Like, he's saving his childhood friend. He's a noble person, and he's pretty much got a level head. Like, he almost never shouts at anybody, and the game opens being like, oh, you're such a fantastic fighter. You're the strongest person in this whole thing, but you never fight. Why is that? And, you know, he's like, they're building this guy up to be like this kind of noble kid who, you know, has so much potential, but he doesn't have a violent bone in his body until he's pushed to it. So it's like, that's not the kind of character that sits there with their thumb on their nose. Like, and you're only supposed to do that for like one line or something. And yeah, he's been doing it for hours now, and I'm afraid that it's just going to be like this. It's such a minor complaint because it really doesn't take anything away from anything. And like I said, there is a bear with a man bun and like big giant gloves, and he's awesome. He fights with a stick. He doesn't even fight like a bear.
And, not like the virtual fighter bears, at least.
No. But he reminds me of them a little bit. But yeah, no, it's just that thing, and I'm kind of like, it's just a why thing. It's like, why? Why do
this? Well, bears with man buns aside, and guys with their thumbs super glued to their face, for $50, what are your thoughts on this one?
Well, I've never had to recommend a $50 game before, so this feels like pressure, because that could be, like, the one game that you can get with that paycheck, or, you know, maybe it's the one game you get for the month. Because you have, you know.
Well, given it's a turn-based strategy RPG, I'm going to assume that it's at least decently long for that $50.
It seems like it is. Like, they're really. It took me hours to get beyond just having the baseline, like, three characters. So.
And that doesn't include the hours you spent grinding a single battle.
Yes, that doesn't count that. I did that once I got that other character. And you know, looking ahead a little bit, it does get really involved. So it looks like it's a pretty grand epic adventure. It's got a lot of good mystery to it. Again, the mechanics alone, I would definitely, if you are a strategy RPG fan in the Final Fantasy Tactics vein, if you like your, if you like the stylized, you know, sort of Edo era, maybe not Edo era, I guess it's feudal Japan. But either way, it's a, if you like your mock-up Japan, like mythology and things like that, you know, you aren't into the goofy, like, Disgaea look or anything like that, I would definitely say this is the game you should be picking up. Mechanics alone, it stands up there with anything. I mean, I haven't been able to think of a thing I want out of this game that I didn't get. So,
nice.
If you are serious about strategy RPGs and $50 is not gonna, you know, it's not gonna be your only game for the whole summer or something like that. Even if it is, it looks like it's long enough.
I mean, it is. Yeah. It is summer. It's the usual like summertime drought for games.
Yeah, so I would say, yeah, go definitely go for it. You know, it's not a JRPG, but it's got that epicness. It's a little bit of a. To me, it's kind of a Dragon Quest feel because, you know, you've got this big thing that's established at the beginning, but along the way, you know, run into smaller things and, you know, it just gets more and more complex. The characters are, you know, they have realistic, like, interactions with each other, even the Man Bun Bear. And it's got Man Bun Bear. So come on, $50, do it.
Sounds good. Well, Chris, thank you so much for covering this one for us, although you should be thanking us for letting you check out Man Bun Bear.
Absolutely. I always appreciate being able to review games for SML.
Is that related to Man Bear Pig? Man Bun Bear?
Oh, you know, I can't speak to that.
Super cereal.
I don't want Kadokawa Games to think that I'm misrepresenting their brand here.
Oh, man. Well, that is it for reviews for now. We're going to take a quick musical break, and we are going to be back with the fantastic ladies of Ripstone Games. So stick around. We'll be right back. Chris, do you have any final words to wrap this up?
Man Bun Bear. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for hanging around. I am joined by two fantastic guests at this time. Coming back to the show from Ripstone Games, we have Michelle Turner, Holly Pattinson. How are you two doing today?
Oh, we are good. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, we're good. Thank you so much for having us back.
Thanks for coming back. It's not often that people are dumb enough to come back a second time.
So. It's not often that people are dumb enough to invite us back.
Yeah, that's more like it.
I'm sad, though. The people who have listened to your first episode, they're going to notice that you're a man down this time. Literally, the man is gone.
The man is gone. I mean, this is the dream team right here. So
yeah, you've got the girls.
Did you finally kill Mike?
Next question.
Okay, where is the body?
Next question, Joe.
No comment.
So he left Ripstone to work with his brother, right?
Yeah, he has been doing some work with his brother, actually. His brother launched a game just after Mike left Ripstone.
So
they've been doing some stuff together as far as I know.
That's pretty cool that he's found a new family, I guess, like an actual like blood relative family to put up with him.
But, yeah, you could put it that way, I guess. Yeah.
But they're not the only ones to release a game, because Ripstone just released Chess Ultra upon the masses of the world. First, congrats on the game release.
Thank you.
It is a fantastic chess experience, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that plenty. For the people who don't know what it is and have somehow never heard of chess in their life, tell us about Chess Ultra.
Yeah, so we are super excited about Chess Ultra
for
a couple of different reasons as well. For anybody that doesn't know, at Ripstone, we're first and foremost a games publisher. And Chess Ultra is the first game that we have fully developed in-house here at Ripstone. So we have developed it from scratch, we have published it, so it is the first 100% Ripstone game. So for that reason, it's super special to us.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, so we're really excited about it for that reason. And as well, we're just really excited about it because it's amazing. And it is literally, obviously everybody knows chess, and it's the universal language that everybody knows. You might be terrible, but that's okay.
I'm terrible.
Yeah, we know. We all know that. So we wanted to do something a little bit different with Chess Ultra. So it's 4K, it's got full VR compatibility, it's out on a whole load of platforms.
All the different platforms, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, PC, PlayStation VR, Oculus and Vive.
Yeah, and we've announced everything. That it's coming to Xbox One X.
Yeah.
So it's just, it isn't the Ultra Chess experience. I know it's called Chess Ultra and that sounds really like cheesy, but it literally is the Ultra Chess experience. And yeah, we're super happy with it.
It's just kind of like just loads of really cool stuff in there as well. It's not just like your average chess game. I mean, for example, like in the VR mode, you can play against the Grim Reaper, and when else in your life are you ever going to get to experience that, unless maybe you're actually about to die?
I mean, that's a bleak thought.
Do you think the Grim Reaper plays chess himself?
I mean, he did in Bill and Ted.
But is that just a stereotype now that you guys are perpetuating with this game? Or has he come in to do, like, proper mocap for himself?
Yeah, he comes in, it's like a Sims deal where he, like, opens the door and comes through and he's like, I'm here to do the mocap. No.
He's got, like, a coffee in his hand. He's like, oh, it's too early for this shit.
No, but it's funny because we spent a lot of time getting the Grim Reaper right, because obviously in VR that is such a huge part of the immersion, is that you're playing against this guy and you're in Gamora, and our artists did an insane job of modeling Gamora and just making it incredible. So we really wanted the Grim Reaper to be right as well, so we spent a lot of time making sure that his animations are good and everything's cool and that he's scary as shit and like it's just it's great. We're the Grim Reaper feature for me is the absolute highlight.
Yeah, and you need to make sure you get it right as well, because also if the Grim Reaper ever plays Chess Ultra, we don't want to piss him off.
Exactly. If he plays and he's like, this is not a good representation, then who knows what's
we might
happen.
All die.
You just get like a pissed off email. It's like from reaper@death.com or something.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I have some issues with the way I was portrayed in your game.
From the Grim Reaper's lawyer. Like, this is not a realness.
Mr. Reaper has some issues with his portrayal in your video game release.
Exactly, it could happen.
The robes are completely inaccurate. So you get to play chess against the Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
How did you just decide to put that in this game?
I mean,
of all the crazy ideas, that might be near the top of craziest chess ideas.
Yeah, I want to say it was one of our directors, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that came up with Phil. The initial idea.
Yeah.
So Phil came up with the idea, and because the rest of chess, so the thing with Chess Ultra is that there's kind of two parts to it. There's the part that is a very serious, completely kind of as it is in real life chess game.
Yeah.
And it's exactly as it is in real life. It has Elo rankings as there are in the real chess world. So yeah, it's kind of super serious. It's a real strong chess game. And then on the other side, you've got the craziness of Death and the Grim Reaper and Gamora and the Fire and Brimstone chess set, and it's all just a bit crazy. So I guess the idea of having those two elements and bringing them together so that you can buy one game, but you're getting two different experiences in one. You're getting the one kind of, you know, I want to sit down, chill out in a library, play some chess. But then you can also have the, I just want to go hang out in hell and play some chess against a dead man. So bringing both of those things together just for us was the perfect package, because we wanted something that was, you know, super serious but also super fun. Yeah. And I think that we've managed to do that in Ultra.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be going down pretty well. Yeah. So I kind of think maybe we've got it right.
I hope so, yeah. The feedback we've had has been great. And I saw that you guys talked about it. And you'd done a review for it, and yeah, you know, we've had really great feedback, especially for the Grim Reaper in VR. And I would encourage anybody that has got a VR headset and hasn't tried it yet, please do, because it really is something special.
Yeah.
And really scary.
I really need to pick up the PS4 version of the game for the VR stuff. We reviewed it on the Xbox One because clearly we prefer Xbox on this show. Always been that way. But,
sorry about that.
Oh, snap.
Oh, my heart, my bleed. But I still do want to try picking up the PlayStation version of the game so I could check out the VR modes and put that PlayStation VR to use. I'm kind of disappointed that I asked about flipping the table in VR mode and you said it's not in there.
I know. Do you know, so many people have asked about flipping the table in VR. I mean, it's something we spent so long crafting these environments, and our artists, as I've already said once, another shout out to our artists because they are just insanely talented. And they've done such an amazing job that we kind of didn't want to take away from the realness and it being so beautiful with a table flip.
I know.
Because, I mean,
and it's also, like, really against all kind of chess etiquette as well.
Yeah.
So we obviously spent, like, a lot of time speaking to, like, grandmasters and international masters when we were doing this. And there's, like, in the chess community, flipping the table is actually kind of like stabbing someone in the eye, basically.
But there are a lot of rules like that in the chess community. A lot of things. Like, you're not supposed to say check when you play chess. But I mean, you do, don't you?
Yeah.
You put someone in check and you're like, ha ha, you're in check.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I totally get the flipping the table thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel like in real life, if I was losing, I would probably flip a table.
Oh, yeah.
And I would be losing because I'm not good.
I'm a really bad loser.
So if you're not supposed to say check, what's the proper etiquette?
You just glare at each other.
You just, like, look at them and be like, you know.
Yeah.
You just have, like, fuck you eyes staring at them. Like,
exactly.
You, oh,
exactly.
You know.
Yeah, exactly that. The assumption is that your opponent should know, and if they don't, well, I don't know.
Boo for them.
No, if they don't realize it, then they lose the next turn, I guess.
Exactly.
But yeah, I know personally, anytime I get a new VR game that I'm trying, if it lets me use the Move controllers to pick things up, the first thing I try to do is see what I could throw, what I could, you know, smash around. Have you considered maybe, like, it's an earnable, unlockable mode that you could just, like, start chucking pieces and flipping tables and throw the board at someone?
Like, chess juggling. I mean, that could be good. Like, chess piece juggling. Yeah, it's fun. That was one of the things. We just got back from E3 and we showed Chess Ultra at the show at an event called The Mix. And loads of people came to play it. We were showing it on PlayStation VR and people were using the Move controllers and they were really excited that you can use the Move controllers. And
yeah,
for us, it was just a no-brainer because obviously VR works the best when you're able to reach out and pick things up in your VR environment. So yeah, that is a very good suggestion, Joe, about having a mode where you can just throw shit around. I mean, whether the dev team will go for that is another question, but I love it. So well, that's something.
if an unlockable mode isn't on the table, you could always be like downloadable DLC, pay $4 and you have like the chess shooting gallery where you just chuck pieces at like mini Grim Reapers walking at you.
This is taking a weird turn. This is going to be a very different kind of game.
Yeah.
But if you're going with the pseudo crazy with playing against the Grim Reaper in hell, why not go like full on crazy and throw like some kind of weird offbeat mode in there? Clearly not the main star of the game, but you know, maybe something where if you defeat the Grim Reaper, it unlocks this mode where you can just like throw pieces at the Grim Reaper
and distract him.
Yeah, just like,
I mean, you don't need to distract him if you already defeated him.
Oh yeah, I see. Yeah, well, I mean, you know what, Joe, we never say never, so
keep your suggestions coming.
Chess Circus DLC could be coming. Who knows?
Think how satisfying it would be to like claim his queen and then just like pick it up and throw it at his stupid face.
Yes. I mean, it might just go straight through him as well though, because he's just made of bones.
He is made of bones.
True. So if you got it at the right angle, you could just like throw it through his ribs and it could
That'd be
just
amazing. Get it, yeah, get it through an eye hole or something.
Yeah.
Have realistic chess piece bone bouncing physics in there. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure our dev team will love this idea. It sounds very complex.
Yeah.
I think VR people
We never say never.
I think VR people would appreciate being able to at least flip the table or throw the board or something.
Yes.
Just that sense of destruction. It feels so good in VR.
Yeah, because no one ever wants to do it in real life to their own house, because then you've got to tidy up afterwards.
Yeah, it's too messy. In a virtual world, just throwing chess pieces everywhere, like, you just exit the mode and go back in and everything's clean again.
Yeah. Exactly.
The masses of the world want to flip boards.
Yeah.
So how's the reception been? The game's been out about a week now, a little over a week for most platforms, just under a week for Xbox. What's the reception been like so far?
Amazing.
Yeah, it's been so good.
Actually amazing. We kind of touched on it earlier. This one's super close to our heart at Ripstone, and that sounds really cheesy, but it is. Obviously, when you launch a game, you're on the edge and you're like, what are people going to think?
Yeah, it's always really nerve-wracking.
Yeah, it's a really tense time, but it's been amazing. We've had so much love from the community, and from chess players and from people that have never played chess, parents that want to teach their kids how to play chess.
Yeah.
And the feedback has just been amazing and the support has just been insane. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the long and short of it is that it's been great.
Yeah, we've just been, like, on such a high. It's just so lovely. It's just so nice to kind of hear that everyone kind of loves this game as much as we do. Because it is one of those things, kind of, you're in the development bubble and you get really excited about it and you kind of think, oh, we think this is awesome. But then you kind of think, but are we just kind of thinking it's awesome because we're just so in love with it? And when we show it to the outside world, they're all going to be like, oh, this is crap. But no, everyone in the outside world loves it as well. So it's kind of like, oh, yay.
Oh, yay. We did good. We did it, guys. We actually celebrated today in the office. So obviously, like you said, it's been out like a week now. So we were like, you know what? Now's a safe time to celebrate because everything's been fine. Yeah. Everything's going good. So we're like, now it's time for cake. So our director's brought in a Chess Ultra cake today, which you can see on our Twitter. It's twitter.com/ripstonegames. And I put a picture of it up on there, and that was great.
It was super tasty. Yeah. Yum, yum. Definitely.
I got to find a picture of this cake now.
Yeah, it was so good. It's just got Chess Ultra on the cake. So that was pretty good. More of that. please, if you're listening, Leo and Phil, more cake.
Is more always cake. Welcome. Always cake.
Yeah.
What kind of cake was it? Vanilla cake? Confetti cake?
Yeah, it was like vanilla with like jam and like creamy stuff in the middle.
Yeah, it was like a real kid's birthday cake.
Yeah.
It was good.
Covered in icing. Like sugar coat icing, whatever it's called.
Yeah, and something you asked about, like the reception, and kind of we talked a bit about the community stuff, but we have had like some players are playing a lot of Chess Ultra.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I mean, a lot. I mean, it came out last week and we can see like the figures on the server, and someone had played over 600 games in like 2.5 days.
I mean, I don't know how they even have that much time.
It's crazy. That is like amazing. And we've added a whole load of new features into Chess Ultra. So there is a blitz mode, so you can play speed chess. So I can see how you could technically fit that many games in.
Yeah.
But still.
That is dedication.
That is a crazy load of chess.
Yeah. That is a dedicated chess player.
Yeah.
600 games.
600 games.
Jeez.
I know, right? And I mean, I've had emails from people that have bought 3 copies of the game so that everyone in their family can play together and against each other. It's just things like that that make you think, like, we did it.
Yay! It's good. We did good, team.
Yeah, people like our game. So yeah, it's good. It's been a really, really great week.
Yep.
It's always a plus when people enjoy the game. So that's the first step to world domination.
Exactly. One step closer.
So I know you said this was the first game you built in-house. I know Ripstone also published the Pure Chess game. What, like, was that an outside developer? Was that partially in-house, partially out?
So that was developed by Vufu Studios. So that was kind of like entirely developed kind of by them externally. And we just kind of, even though it was our idea, so we kind of said, we want to make this chess game. Can you guys develop it? We kind of essentially just did the publishing on that. And kind of like the same with all the Pure series, we had these ideas for really like beautiful looking parlor games. So like Pure Chess, Pure Pool, Pure Hold'em. And we kind of just presented them all to Vufu and said, can you guys make these games? We know you can make things that are really good. And they were kind of up for it, and they were like, yeah, let's do this. But yeah, now it's kind of like, let's get involved and let's kind of bring the next iteration of chess in-house, because now we've got our own in-house team to do these ideas that we have.
Well, was it tough getting a team assembled to work in-house instead of just being the publisher?
I mean, it's always difficult finding really good, talented people. I mean, there's kind of like, we've got so many kind of different like variations of talent in our like in our company, kind of from the coders to the artists and the producers,
and our team have been drawn from some amazing studios from all over the country. We've had guys that have worked at Xbox, Sony, literally the talent that we've got is amazing, and we're really lucky to have them. And as well, I think for working for an indie studio is something obviously that is for some people and it's not for others, and you've got to be super invested in the project that you're working on.
Yeah.
And everybody here is 100% behind what we're doing, and it really shows, like all of the meetings that we had in pre-production and throughout production and development, everybody's just wants the best for the game.
Yeah.
And we've been really lucky to find people that fit into the team that way, and they're talented, but they're also really behind what we're doing. So
Yeah,
it's been good. It's been really, really good.
Because I think we're kind of lucky as well of where we're based in Liverpool. It's quite a lot of big game studios here, and there have been like big game studios here in the past as well. So there is like a lot of video game talent in the Northwest England. So it's kind of, we've just been lucky that there's been people that are super talented that are kind of in the area, and we've kind of scouted them to make beautiful looking games.
Yeah, claimed them as our own.
Yeah.
And we love them very much.
Yes.
If any of you are listening.
You just kidnapped random developers.
I mean, we didn't want to say that, but yes.
Who'd you steal developers from?
We can't talk about that, Joe. We told you.
Can't say their real names. They'll find them.
Everyone's under a fake name. We all have fake aliases.
The credits are just like John Doe 1, John Doe 2, Jane Doe.
Exactly.
Like Harry Potter, just have fake names popping up.
Yeah. But yeah, no, we've got a great team here, and everyone's just so lovely as well. Like, we just get along so well. So
it's funny. It's funny that you mentioned the credits, actually, because there might be some people in the credits that you wouldn't recognize, and they are the names of grandmasters that we've worked with. Yeah. And we said to them, we were like, oh, like, we want to put you in the credits. And they were like, hell yes, put us in the credits. So there's a list of some of the super talented chess people that we've worked with.
Yeah.
And we kind of, they've been working with us now for quite a long time, haven't they?
Yeah.
In various different capacities, whether that's on Twitch Plays Chess Ultra, whether that's in being in generating the AI engine, or in so many different capacities, and we've been incredibly lucky to have their support.
Yeah.
And I think in that respect, the game kind of spoke for itself, because we showed them the game and we said, look, this is what we're working on. What do you think? And they were all behind it from the start as well, weren't they?
Yeah, it's just like the easiest pitch ever. Yeah. It's just like, yeah, this is amazing. Okay, great. Let's get involved.
Which has been great, because it's meant that I've got to go to some like crazy chess events that I would never have been to before. And I got to see grandmasters. I saw the second best chess player in the world playing speed chess, getting drunk at the same time. And literally amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
How do you play chess drunk? Well, I know how you play chess drunk, but
how do you do anything drunk?
How do you do it well drunk?
How do you do anything sober is my question. No. It's funny that you say that, actually, because we did a Twitch Plays Chess live stream last week on Wednesday for the launch of Chess Ultra. And we did the stream with Sabrina Siobhan. She's an international women's master. And we were talking to her about this, about drinking whilst playing chess.
Yeah.
And my assumption was that the more you drink, the worse your chess gets.
Yeah.
But she was saying the opposite. She was saying the more you drink, well, the more she drinks, the better she gets.
Yeah, and I think Simon Williams is the same as well, Ginger GM.
Yeah, he said the same thing. He was like, the more I drink, the better my chess gets. So I don't know how that works.
I don't know, because I kind of think sometimes I get better at things when I'm drunk because I'm more confident.
I don't want to know what you get better at when you're drunk.
But it's like you get better because you're more confident. But with chess, you kind of need to be like thinking ahead and have the strategy. And they're kind of grandmasters and international masters already. I guess they're already pretty confident in their chess skills.
So maybe they've just given up. They're like, I'd rather get drunk than play chess. So
Do you think maybe the alcohol it prevents you from overthinking? So you're just your natural instincts of chess and how long you've been playing will let you do the proper moves instead of overthinking things and trying to place too many moves far ahead.
I did say that.
Yeah, I do think that, because that's kind of like what I'm like when I'm drunk. Again, not with playing chess, but just with
just
life
at work
general.
Every day.
Yeah,
yeah.
Making them daily decisions about Chess Ultra and just drunk. Yeah,
just with my hip flask.
That'd be amazing. You should just join the show drunk one time. That'd be fun.
And also very dangerous.
I mean, see, the problem here is we always say like, oh, like, I mean, we don't always say let's get drunk at work. That came out wrong. But we have ideas of like, oh, let's get drunk at work, or after work, should I say. But then we all drive to work.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, oh, if we get drunk, we're just going to have to stay at work.
Do you have like pull out beds there or anything that you could just nap on? Sleep it off.
I mean, we have like our sofa.
We would have to fight over the sofa.
Yeah. And we've got a blanket, but that's it.
Yeah. not ideal sleeping circumstances, really. I'd rather go home.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd rather not wake up hungover in work in last night's clothes.
You wake up and just look at coworkers like, you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you came on the show drunk one time, I might be able to, you know, pry some secrets out of you.
Oh, no. I mean, you're good at prying secrets anyway, so...
I'm terrible at it. Everyone who comes on the show is too good at, like, keeping secrets secret.
Because we have to keep secrets secret. That's our job, to keep secrets secret.
Because if things weren't secret, then we'd have nothing to talk about in the future. If we told you everything now... In a few months' time, you'd be like, what's Ripson up to? It's like, well, we told you everything now. We've got nothing new to talk about.
Yeah, but see, I would know, but no one listens to my show, so the secret is perfectly safe.
I mean, Joe, the most we can tell you is that we do have secrets, but we can't tell you them.
Yeah. We have several secrets.
We do have several secrets. Very exciting secrets.
Yeah, some are really exciting.
But they won't be secrets forever, so...
Exactly.
There's that to look forward to.
The one secret I want to know, are you guys...
nervous.
looking into or currently working on Chess Ultra for the Switch.
How did I know that was coming?
Because I've asked you about it how many times during your streams. You had to know it was coming. You had to know.
Yeah, no, I knew that was coming. To be honest, we've had that question 100 times. 100 isn't even enough. 1,000 times. Well, we're currently working on Ironcast for Nintendo Switch. So all of our efforts are kind of on that at the minute. We're looking at bringing that over to Switch, and it's coming out this summer. So we're really excited to be working on the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
And bringing a game to Switch because, I mean, speaking for myself, I'm a huge Nintendo fan.
Yeah.
So as I was eyeing up your Amiibo collection before we started. And, yeah, so for me, it is a huge, huge thing to be bringing something to Switch. And Ripstone have got a history with Nintendo. Yeah. We're a Nintendo partner. We've brought games to the 3DS, to Wii U. So for us, it's kind of, again, it's a no-brainer to be working on Switch. But right now, we're focusing our efforts on Ironcast.
Yeah.
Which we're crazy excited about.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to Ironcast.
It's a good one. It's a good one.
It's a good one.
And then so Chess Ultra?
Answer your question.
On a personal level, I just think the Switch is a perfect platform for Chess Ultra, especially with the two Joy-Con where you could take the Switch with you and run into someone and be like, hey, you want to go at chess? Then you each have a controller and you're each going at it, and it just seems like the perfect platform.
Yeah, I mean, seems like it would work pretty well, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, what I will say, it's on our radar, as is every game for every platform. Whenever we bring out a game, we look at every platform that we could bring it to, and we kind of look at the pros, we look at the cons. So it's on our radar. So that is all we can say right now.
Yeah.
Are there any other titles that are on the radar for the Switch?
Ironcast is the main thing right now.
Yeah.
Because it's the first title that we're bringing to Switch as well. We want to make sure it's right. So we're going through the process of bringing a game to Nintendo Switch, which we've never done before.
Yeah.
And we're working with an amazing developer called Dreadbit, Daniel, who developed Ironcast. So we're working with him. And we're working through all the Switch stuff, and it's going really well.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're really happy with how that's going, and we're confident that in the future we definitely would be able to bring more games to Switch if we decided it was the right thing. So, yeah, it's all good. All good in the hood, Switch-wise.
Is Ironcast going to utilize the touchscreen?
It is.
It utilizes everything.
It's bloody well good. Yeah, it's great. I mean, have you played Ironcast, Joe?
Yes, I have. We covered it on the show.
Yeah, so, I mean, the node grid and matching the resources for Ironcast was literally, I don't know how Daniel did it, but it was designed for the Switch.
Yeah.
Literally. It is the perfect game to play on Switch. But as Michelle was saying, you can play it handheld, you can play it docked, you can play it tabletop, it supports Pro Controller. And one of the other cool things is that it uses the HD rumble really nicely. So when you fire from your Ironcast on the left over to the enemy on the right, you feel the shot start on the left and then hit on the right Joy-Con. So,
ooh, that's cool.
Yeah. Daniel has done a great job of putting in the HD rumble support. So yeah, it's got some really nice features on Switch. So we're really looking forward to that coming out this summer. And we should have details for that. Fairly soon, shouldn't
we? Yeah, pretty soon.
I mean, it's summer now, so it's gonna be soon.
So it's releasing this week, right? You said summer.
It's releasing right now.
Today.
It's an E3 presentation. It's available right now. So what'd you guys think of E3? You were there, right?
Yeah. It was different this year. Obviously this year they had loads of consumers there as well.
Yeah, to deal with the commoners.
No, we love the commoners.
It was good.
Yeah, it was completely different experience, but it was really cool. Yeah,
I think there's two sides of it, because we've been to E3, both of us have been to E3 quite a few times.
Yeah,
it was my third show, and for me, even being like the third time that I've been, the excitement doesn't get any less. I literally, yeah. You walk onto the show floor for the first time and it just floors you. And you're like, oh my God, I'm at E3. This is just amazing. And I still get really excited. I can't speak, Michelle?
Yeah, I still get excited.
So it's kind of mutual. So having just more people, was it like 15,000 consumers?
Yeah.
Having more people that are going through that same excitement is only a good thing. Because that's crazy exciting. And you could tell there was a great atmosphere at the show.
Yeah.
But then with that comes the fact that we're still at work. So
trying to get from meeting to meeting, one hall to the other,
through crowds of very excited people. I mean, I'm a very excited person, but when I'm trying to get to a meeting, I am brutal. I am not excited anymore. So trying to get through the crowds, and it did seem to be a lot more crowded this year. But I guess there's pros and cons. If it helps the show keep growing, amazing, because it's, you know, it's one of the highlights of the year, isn't it? For us, I would say it was landed somewhere in the middle. It wasn't the worst thing in the world. It wasn't the best thing in the world. It was just great.
Yeah, it was just a different experience.
Yeah.
It's just okay.
Well, no, I mean, the show, if we're talking about how the show went for Ripstone, the show was amazing.
Yeah.
It was really good. We met up with loads of people that we wanted to show, both Ironcast and Chess Ultra, too. We got a great response. We were doing some stuff with Nvidia, and like, we just had a really good show, didn't we?
Yeah.
A busy show.
We were both so knackered after it. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was very, very tiring, but it was good. It was really good.
Were Chess and Ironcast the only two things you were showing off this year?
Yes.
Nothing behind closed doors?
Nothing else behind closed doors, and that's not even a lie or a secret. That is 100% the truth.
Do they still do the behind closed doors things at E3?
They do. Yeah.
The secret hush hush stuff where you have to sign NDAs before you get to see a trailer.
You up to a meeting room on the second floor, and then they like sign you in, and they're like, "Oh, it's all a secret."
Proper top secret stuff.
But no secrets from us this year. It was literally, we were showing Ironcast and we were showing Chess Ultra, so it was easy peasy for us because we had nothing to keep secret.
I know, we could just talk about it all.
I hope to one day do the E3 thing myself. I had so many people asking if I'd be there this year, and I live in Pennsylvania that I can't make that kind of haul. Like, this show doesn't make any kind of money, so I can't afford a trip out there.
It's a long trek from anywhere, basically, unless you live in LA.
It is a long way. But for us, it was worthwhile, wasn't it? The trip was it was great. And I was going to say as well, whilst we talk about E3, I feel like I have to say that I got to play Mario Odyssey.
Yeah.
Ooh. And it was amazing. So
because that was like special one-on-one, like not even in the queues with the commoners if that's what we're calling them.
I mean, it was
Joe's words, not mine.
It was just absolute luck. We bumped into our Nintendo account manager literally on the desk, and she was like, "Hey, come upstairs, play some Mario," and I was like, "Hell yes." So that was, for me, highlight of the show, hands down.
It was brilliant, just like sitting on like the plushy sofas in this private room, just being able to play Mario by ourselves. That was pretty awesome. That's pretty cool.
I can't wait for that one. Do you have your Mario Odyssey amiibo pre-ordered yet?
No.
Oh, you should see the look on Holly's face. She looks like she's about to cry.
Just the sadness rushes over. I don't have him pre-ordered yet either, so.
I mean, the amiibo road is just a very sad road right now, because I think I really wanted the new Pikmin amiibo, and we managed to get that one. But the others were having real trouble finding, and it's very sad. And I can see that you've got all of the amiibo that I want. So
we're going to fly over to Pennsylvania, steal them all.
Maybe I could do you a trade. Maybe I'll trade you a secret for an amiibo.
It depends on the amiibo.
I love that it doesn't depend on the secret. It's like, I'm very close to my amiibo. It would depend on which one.
Well, we can confirm Chess Ultra is being developed for the Switch, but I want that Majora's Mask amiibo.
Do you know, we'll talk after the show, Joe, because that amiibo, my God.
It's been such a headache trying to get these new Zelda amiibo as well. Like, this exclusive retailer crap in America needs to stop.
Oh, I know. I mean, we have the same problems in the UK. It's really tough. To get hold of any amiibo now, to be completely honest, is all of the Animal Crossing ones are still available for like £5 everywhere, but you can't get anything else. So yeah, it's a bit sad, really. But
I got my sister a Tom Nook amiibo for 99 cents.
Oh my god, that is crazy! That is insane, isn't it? Yeah. 99 cents.
Yep.
What a steal. Yeah. I mean, you could have got me one for 99 cents.
If you want one for 99 cents, I think my Best Buy still has a couple of them.
Still has them in there. Oh my god, that's amazing.
And they have the three pack with a KK Slider and then the other two I don't give a shit about for $3.
That's insane. And I love Animal Crossing. It makes me a little bit sad to see that the Animal Crossing ones are so cheap, because Animal Crossing is my jam. I absolutely love it. If they announce Animal Crossing for Switch, I am literally gonna fall off my chair. So, yeah, I'm waiting for that.
Yeah, I can't. I was really hoping we would hear something from them at E3 about Animal Crossing.
I know, I hope so as well. But Nintendo don't follow the rules, do they? They announce when and where they want.
Yeah, they just do whatever they want.
So, I mean, it could be coming. Who knows?
I want a new Animal Crossing game that's not a home designer, that's not based around cards, and that isn't a shitty Wii U party game.
I feel you. I feel you.
We need that MMO Animal Crossing.
Yes. That needs to happen. Oh my god, imagine. Yes. That would be awesome.
Do you think Nintendo will ever go that far with the series that they'll do an MMO?
I mean, I don't know. In New Leaf, being able to go to each other's town online blew my mind. Like, that whole thing was just amazing, where you could jump on, you could see who's online, and go into someone else's town, talk to each other with a really limited chat feature. But it was so good. So they've kind of dabbled in the online stuff, haven't they? And
they just seem so far behind in terms of, like, online features and just having their overall shit together online compared to everyone else. Like, even with the Switch, the fact that you need a friggin' smartphone app
for the voice feature, yeah.
That's so stupid.
Nintendo do what Nintendo do, don't they? They, you know, they are carving their own road. I mean, yeah. That, like, their E3 conferences say it all, don't they? They are the first to just stop doing a press conference.
Yeah.
But I kind of admire them for that, in a way. They're doing their own thing, and it seems to be going pretty well.
Yeah, so. It's going pretty well. Like, it does not bother anyone at all. So all the Nintendo fans still love Nintendo.
And I'm a huge Nintendo. I'm going to go there. I mean, some might say I'm a Nintendo fanboy. So, for me, they could pretty much do anything, and I would still be like, woo, Nintendo! So, there's that.
Yeah, I've been a Nintendo fan my whole life as well. I think my mom bought me the NES, I want to say, 86.
Oh, amazing.
I think I'm dating myself with that.
I know. I was just going to say, Holly wasn't even born then.
I was not born in 86, no.
Oh, my Lord. You're so young.
I was, don't worry.
Yay. Yeah, my first system I played was ColecoVision, because my dad had that. And then the first system I personally owned was the NES, because my mom bought me that and like a 13-inch black-and-white TV.
Oh my god.
And probably, I want to say March for my birthday of 86. And
that's amazing.
I've been a Nintendo fan since. I don't have that same NES, no. I've been through a few over the years. Just the fact that the I can't think of the word. The thing where you plug the cart in.
I know what you mean.
Would just bend because of how stupid the American design was.
Yeah.
Of having to put it in and click it down.
Yeah, I am biased towards the EU version. So, but I mean, I would be, because I'm from the UK. But then I wasn't even born when it came out, so what say do I have? Probably not.
Do you have an NES Classic over there?
Let's not talk about that right now. I am very upset about the SNES Classic. They went up for sale. I mean, I don't know if they did in the US, but they went up for pre-order in the UK yesterday, and they sold out in
minutes. Sold out already?
Yeah,
in minutes. Oh my god.
And I mean, I'm also upset about the price as well, because it's £80 in the UK, and the NES Classic was £50. So, and I know it comes with a second controller, but Yeah, I was just really annoyed how quickly it sold out, and now I've told myself that we're not going to buy one just out of principle, which is a difficult decision, because if I see one, I think I will probably just buy it anyway.
I like you say out of principle. It's like, you're not going to buy one because you don't have the choice to buy one because they're not available.
I'm trying to tell myself it's my decision, but okay. Really, I just can't find one. But yeah, have you got one?
The SNES, they didn't start pre-orders over here yet, but I do have an NES Classic.
Amazing. They are. I don't have one. I couldn't get hold of one of those either, but I have played one, and they're so nice. Like, the interface is great. It's really good.
I think it's cool, but I never use it, and I might actually be selling it today of all days. Some guys offer.
Oh, Joe, thanks you.
Some guy's offering me $175 for it.
Wow, yeah, I'm
and
not surprised.
I could use that money for like other things. And it, given how little I've used the NES Classic, as awesome as the thing is. You know, we need some work done on our car that money could go towards. We could grab groceries with that kind of money. So
those things are getting like gold dust though now. They are really hard to find. So, I mean, yeah, well, I can see why
they stopped making them. So,
yeah, it's crazy. But just play on a real NES. That was my response. I mean, we couldn't get one, so I didn't have a choice. But at least we have an actual NES, so I can play on there. So swings and roundabouts.
But I'm ridiculously excited for the SNES Classic. Just the game lineup on that thing, like, I need to own that.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Oh, man. The big one for me is Earthbound.
Yeah.
So, starting from scratch, that will be the cheapest way to play Earthbound. Because it's $80 to get in and play instead of, you know, needing to buy a new Nintendo 3DS or a Wii U for the virtual console. Plus the $10 for the game.
I mean, I hope you can get one, Joe, because literally they went up yesterday and they were gone in, 10 minutes or something like that. Yeah,
it's ridiculous. I know Nintendo's, they're claiming that they're going to do better with supply this time, but I don't believe them.
No.
I really hope so.
The issues with the recent Link Amiibo show how much they care about meeting consumer demand.
No.
Which is a shame, because they have such cool shit.
That's it, isn't it? If their stuff wasn't so good, I wouldn't care. But it's, the fact that it's so amazing is just, Nintendo probs.
Get your shit together, Nintendo. I want an SNES Classic. I need to have that in my life.
Yeah, I mean, I'm praying for you. I hope it happens.
Well, on the plus side, I have friends who work at GameStop, and they said that, to their knowledge, they're not doing pre-orders at all.
Okay.
Because I'm going to guess that they've been burned by Nintendo too much with pre-orders that they don't get enough for.
I
think they're just going to do, like, it's out, we have some, buy them, they're gone, we'll let you know when we have more. Can you pre-order? No. You can just show up when we have them and hope.
You just got to get down there. You have to camp outside.
Yeah, get up early.
I guess the benefit to having friends who work at GameStop is they're like, yeah, when they come in, we'll let you know.
So, I guess, yeah, that is a great perk.
So it's good making friends places.
Yeah.
And then the Switch is still hard to find.
Oh, I know. I mean, but it seems to be getting a bit better, though.
Yeah, I've been helping friends out because... today, if I wanted, I could just go to Best Buy and they have like a dozen of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And no one realizes it. Like, everyone's looking for them. I've been to GameStop and they're like, yeah, we have people coming in asking all the time and we're selling these $500 bundles that they have to wait to get shipped to their house. I'm like, they have a bunch over at Best Buy. And they're like, do they?
Yeah. I mean, it's great. And I think it's a testament to Nintendo how well they've done with the Switch, really, because... It's especially like the indie stuff for Switch. There are so many amazing indie games coming to Switch and already out on Switch. So the fact that they sold out, I know Nintendo sometimes are accused of doing the thing, supply and demand, make it hard to find. But I genuinely think that, you know, they might not have been expecting the uptake that they got with the Switch. And it's been good.
Yeah.
I guess nobody was really sure how it was going to go.
Especially after the Wii U.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
That was such a disappointment for them. I still enjoy my Wii U, but...
I do as well. I really do. But I enjoy the Switch even more than that. So
After using a Switch and going back to that bulky Wii U gamepad.
Makes you think, doesn't it? It's like, how did I do this?
This feels so primitive. So bulky and plasticky.
I know. The Switch is just so nice, isn't it? It's like super slick. It's great.
Oh, such a gorgeous system, too.
And soon to have Ironcast on it.
Indeed.
Tenuous Link.
So are you guys looking at like a July release for that? August release?
To be honest, we actually don't know yet.
Now still up in the air?
Just summer, yes. And summer goes on for a few more months.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we're confident it will be summer.
We'll have more details on it soon. It's just, yeah, we want to make sure that it's like the best it can be before we get it out to everyone. So right now, as Michelle said, we're not sure, but it's definitely going to be this summer.
Are there going to be any kind of like exclusive features or exclusive content to that version of the game?
Yeah, there is actually. There's quite a few things. So the Switch version has some console exclusive commanders that you can't get on any other console. There's one console exclusive commander.
Yes.
I can't remember the name.
I've forgotten the name.
Remember the name. And an Ironcaster mech as well. So that's pretty cool. And then there are some like features that have been added in and changed up a little bit in the Switch version.
Yeah.
One being that you can... so basically, for anyone that's listening thinking, what the hell is Ironcast? Ironcast is a turn-based mech combat game with a huge focus on strategy. You're basically playing to defend the British Isles. You're commanding a 7-meter-tall mech war machine. And you're basically on your way to a huge battle with the French. And the way that you do those battles is by collecting resources on a node grid. So one of the new features we added on Switch is that if you get a terrible grid and there's no good matches, you can forfeit your turns for that round and you can completely refresh the grid. And just because
sometimes it's so helpful.
it can be really useful. Obviously, it pros and cons, because you've got to sacrifice your matches for that turn. But if you're in a really tricky spot and you need some ammo and all you're getting is coolant and energy, it's worth it. So that's a Switch exclusive feature, actually. Yeah. So that's a really good one. And as well, another thing that's Switch exclusive is that you can sell your old either weapons, drives, shields. Once you've equipped a new one and your old one's out, you're obviously not going to go back to it, so you can sell it.
Yeah, you can sell it for scrap.
Yeah.
Nice. Is that something that could be patched in or updated in the previous releases, or is that just going to stay Switch only?
I believe it's going to say Switch only.
Yeah.
That is the plan at present.
Yeah.
Switch. Fuck everyone else.
I mean, the game's been out now for 2.5 years on PC, hasn't it?
Yeah, maybe even a bit. Yeah,
These are just little things. And Ironcast is Daniel's baby, absolutely Daniel's baby, and we trust him completely when it comes to development with Ironcast. He came to us and said, hey, I've had these ideas, there are these little changes I want to do. But we did spend a lot of time umming and ahhing, Daniel included, over whether they should go in, whether they shouldn't. And it's taken quite a while to get the balance in just right, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Because when you add in a change like that, it kind of, everything else needs to be amended as well to kind of balance it out. So Daniel's done a great job of doing that on Switch. So, yeah, for now it's going to be Switch exclusive. Who knows? But that's where it's at right now.
I have cats jumping on me to get on my desk.
Good. Well, there's always time for more cats.
I have so many of these little assholes, too.
I'm certain that they did this last time as well. When we were on here last time, they were coming in.
They just want to get in on the action.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, I want to play.
I love it.
They're adorable. Kittens are so cute. I can't believe I've had these kittens for over a year now, which blows my mind, because to me, they're still kittens. But
they grow up so fast, don't they?
Oh, they are crazy. So adorable.
Do you have a favorite?
My favorite is probably Coltrane.
Coltrane.
Yeah. Named after Coltrane from Gears of War.
Yeah.
She's a tiny little female kitten. who was named after a gigantic, muscular black man.
Amazing. I love it. That is brilliant.
And it was my wife's idea, too, because I was playing Gears at the time. She's like, well, are there any female characters in Gears that you could name her after? I'm like, well, there's Aya, but I don't know. That's kind of a boring name. She's like, what about Coltrane runs on whole grain?
Oh, my God. Like, yes, sold to the highest bidder. I'll take it.
Yeah, so the cat's full name is technically Coltrane Runs on Whole Grain Baby Woo.
Oh, my God. I hope, like, when you take it to the vets, you have to say the full name.
Yeah. I think we've only ever referred to her as Coltrane to the vet, although that would have been fun.
Oh, next time.
When are you telling her off, do you have to full name her then?
Yes. That is a mouthful.
She's one of the only few cats we have that don't start with a P as well, because we have Punk, Piddles, Pork, Predator, Peaches.
Oh my God, you weren't joking that you have a lot of cats.
Yeah, y'all like the crazy cat family.
We have eight cats in this house.
Eight? Wow. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That is a lot.
We were good with five, and then the other three were from my mom because there was a stray down. She lives by a river, and there was a stray they found with like a fishing hook stuck in it.
Aww.
And they took her to the vet. They got her cleaned up and got her adopted. And the vet never mentioned that, hey, I think this cat recently had kittens.
Oh, no.
And 2 days later, they just saw a bunch of kittens running around.
So, oh my God.
Yeah, you know, they took them in, they cleaned them up, they started finding homes, and we were going to take one. His name is Pork. He's a little asshole. I love him. And then we were going to watch the one for one of my wife's coworkers. That's Bean. So we had Pork and Bean.
Yes.
And then a third one we were going to foster for my mom, who was eventually going to take Predator, who's another little asshole who's insane. And they all fell apart, so we got stuck with all three of them.
Oh, oh wow.
Wow, yeah, you have like an army of cats.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mess with you.
I wish I could train them to like attack people.
Yes.
Oh, no, cats hate me. Cats always attack me. They just absolutely hate me. I think it's mutual hatred, though, but yeah, cats always try and go for my face.
Unfortunately, anytime we have company, most of them just run and hide.
Oh. I love a good cat.
But they're adorable, so I love them.
Aww.
Stupid cats. Oh man, so what else have you been up to over at Ripstone? What's going on? What's new?
What have we been up to? I mean, so we're still supporting all of our back catalog stuff.
Yeah.
So Pure Hold'em, new DLC launched today.
It did. Yes,
so,
it did.
Yeah, there is constantly something going on. I mean, always something new. So yeah, Ringleader DLC launched today on PlayStation.
Yep.
On PlayStation 4. So you can go check that out if you've got a PlayStation and you've got Pure Hold'em. New card deck, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a really cool looking one as well.
Yeah, I think it's the last one. We've released like a whole bunch of them over the past year.
Yeah.
So now there's loads to choose from. And they're crazy cheap as well. Are they something like £159 or
maybe like $1.99, just under $2,
yeah, something like that. But yeah, they're really cheap, so check those out for sure because they're pretty cool.
Yeah.
Is it going to be hitting other platforms or just PlayStation?
Yeah, so it's coming to Xbox and Steam on Friday.
Yeah, so all the platforms.
Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, that's happening. We've been streaming loads, haven't we, working with Twitch.
Yes.
Obviously there's the Twitch integration that's built into Chess Ultra. So we've been working with Twitch on that, you know, kind of working with loads of streamers to get that out there, and had a great response from that as well, haven't we?
Yeah.
Twitch have really fallen for Chess Ultra. They love it.
Yeah.
So been doing a lot of that. What else have we been doing?
I can't think of anything else.
I mean, well, you've been being at Glastonbury, so that's a pretty exciting work thing.
I mean, that's nothing to do with work, though. That's just me partying it up.
Living the dream. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, everything that we've been doing for the past month, I would say, has been Chess Ultra.
Yeah.
Because we have been in such a crucial kind of period with the game.
Yes.
That it has been Chess Ultra or nothing.
Yeah, it really has been.
But then we've had bits of Ironcast, and obviously at E3 we're showing the game and stuff like that. But for Chess Ultra, this has been like a really crucial month.
Yeah.
So the majority of our time has been spent on that, I would say.
basically where our brains have been at forever.
My brain is still in Chess Ultra mode, and I need to kind of start snapping it out.
I know, I still dream chess
about
dreams.
Chess.
Yeah.
Dreaming about chess.
I'm sure it doesn't help that you stream chess, what, like twice a week, once a week, twice? How often are you
usually
streaming?
Usually just like once a week. We do like Chess Club Mondays every Monday at 4 PM UK time.
Yeah.
But then because we've been kind of around launch, we've been doing a couple of them on our Wednesday streams as well.
It's been double chess.
But we're streaming later on today, and we are not going to be doing chess today. We're just going to do like a fun game that the community can come and get involved with as well.
God knows what.
Yeah, we haven't quite decided yet. But yeah, that's going to be 4 o'clock today, Wednesday. So yeah, we stream every Monday and every Wednesday at 4 PM UK time.
So by the time this episode releases, it'd be like last week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can catch the one next week.
Yeah, we stream Mondays and Wednesdays, 4 PM BST.
Yeah.
Or GMT, depending on what time zone we're on. So
yeah.
Depends when you're watching this.
So I think that's 11 AM Eastern and then 8 AM Pacific.
Yeah, it's crazy early Pacific. But yeah, we have quite a few people that watch on Pacific time, don't we? Which is amazing.
Yeah, so. People get up early to watch us.
And stay up late.
I know.
And stay up crazy late.
Oh God, stay up crazy late. We've got some people that watch us from Australia, and I'm like, why are you not in bed yet? Yeah. It's well past bedtime.
Like 2 AM in their time.
Maybe they're watching on their phone in bed.
In bed. They could be in bed. That's a good point. They could be.
Ask. Gonna ask people, are you in bed?
Yeah, like raise your hand if you're in bed.
It's Ripstone after dark.
I know. Yeah. It could take a weird turn.
King me.
So that is pretty much what we've been doing, hasn't it? Like, there are secret things that are happening that we can't talk about. Other games that we're working on, but we have nothing to say about those right now, unfortunately.
We will keep you posted.
Yeah.
I'm still going to keep hoping for Chess Ultra on the Switch and then the table flipping VR mode.
Yeah, I'm keep hoping. Those. We'll put the suggestions forward.
And if either of those things happen, you'll be the first to know.
Awesome.
Yep, you can fully take credit for them.
I just want a special thanks in the credits. That's all I want. I'll just wish in one hand, shit in the other, see which one fills up first. Oh, man. You stream on Twitch, and I think it's cool that you actually use the Twitch integration of Chess Ultra to play against the chat.
Yeah, it's crazy fun.
Yeah, it's just like so easy to get everyone involved as well, because that's the kind of thing with Twitch. Like, you want to be able to just talk to people and get them involved and get them playing the game with you, and it's all about that interaction that you have with the community.
And people get super sassy, which is my favorite thing.
Yeah.
Especially if they're not sure. So the best thing is, we have some regulars that are really good at chess, and they come every week and they watch us every Monday and they play against us and they beat us every week, which is, we're just used to it now. But then you get some people that join and they don't know how to play chess, or they haven't played it since they were a kid. And then becomes the thing where someone puts in a move and it's bad. And then people are like, no, don't do that move. It's a rubbish move. The queen. And then people are like, what's going on? I don't know. But we encourage it. Well, like, if you don't know how to play, it doesn't matter. Just throw any old thing in.
Exactly. You're just there to enjoy yourself.
I mean, that's pretty much what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're not good at chess, so.
No.
Despite my efforts, I am not great at chess.
Have you kept track of your record?
No, I haven't. See, I'm a bit afraid to do that, to be honest. I mean, let's put it this way. We've played against Twitch every Monday, sometimes twice a week now for quite a long time.
And I can't even remember the last time we won.
We've never won. We have never won. We have drawn. And I also, I'm pretty sure that I remember we drew because we begged them to let us draw.
Yeah, it was kind of, it was like a guilt trip draw.
Yeah.
We were like, please.
I think it was a pity draw, I would say. Which was very nice of them, and I'll take it, but we have never won. So I don't really want to track my personal record because the Ripstone one is bad enough.
Yes.
So.
Oh, yeah. Man. That's a pity draw. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it definitely was a pity draw.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
How are your chess skills? What are your chess skills like, Joe?
Oh God, it's been too long since I've kept track of how good I am. I played a bit with Chess Ultra for the review, but I don't think I've played enough to fully test the game. I used to play back in middle school quite a bit.
Yeah.
I'm probably middle of the road.
It's really tough, and especially to get to kind of the higher levels, to get like a decent Elo ranking is really difficult. But I find it really fun. I've been living Chess Live 2017, carrying on from Chess Live 2016. So over Christmas, I got a chess set, and I got a chess DVD, and I've really been trying, but I just find it a lot of fun. So even though I'm not good, I say I don't care, I do, but for me, just getting to play it is...
Yeah, it's like the getting involved and taking part, isn't it, rather than the actually being good at it.
Yeah, that sounds really nerdy, doesn't it? No, you just said that out loud.
It's like what your parents say to you at school when you lose the egg and spoon race.
It's the taking part that counts.
It's the taking part that counts. Yeah. Like, no, it's the winning.
It is the winning.
are you hoping to crush the stigma of chess being like the nerd event?
Yeah, because I don't think it is anymore.
No, and I think even in the chess world, it's becoming a bit more kind of less nerdy. I mean, look at Magnus Carlsen, Holly's favourite.
Yeah.
He's like world number one chess, and he's like a model and stuff as well. And he's like...
He models for G-Star.
Yeah, so. He like struts around in his underpants, and he's got a good body. Okay. He's not a nerd.
Well, this is taking a turn. Michelle just hitting on Magnus Carlsen, chess world number one.
But I'm just saying, like, if you saw him and he didn't have a chess piece in his hand, you wouldn't think he was a nerd.
Yeah,
is the point I was trying to make.
I mean, interestingly, we have this question all the time, and like when we get grandmasters on to play against the Twitch chat with us, and we get questions like this all the time. It's like, oh, chess is for nerds, and it's like it's kind of not anymore. Like Forbes did, was it a top 30 under 30?
Yeah, 30 under 30.
The top 30 under 30 in games, and Fabiano Caruana, who's the number two in the world for chess, was on that list.
Mm.
So I think it's changing. I really do. I think the perception of chess is changing. I think Chess Ultra, hopefully, can help with that a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it's super accessible. It's $9.99. It's on a lot of platforms.
£9.99, by the way.
Pounds. £9.99. $12.99.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just kind of bringing chess back to the forefront, and you can do things like, you know, play against your Twitch chat, you can play in VR, you can play against the Grim Reaper. These are things that chess hasn't really seen before, so...
Yeah.
I think it is changing, for the better, as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And the chess industry is huge now. The amount of money that is pumped into the chess industry, in the real world, like for tournaments and competitions, is crazy, so yeah. I think the potential is huge.
Definitely.
But yeah, I say, I've been living chess life for quite some time now.
We're making chess cool. We're bringing sexy back to chess.
Well, we're trying. We're trying.
That's how to do it. The more people playing chess, the better.
Yeah. Exactly.
Exactly. And that's why a big focus of Chess Ultra was making sure that even if you've never played before, that you could pick it up and play. So we spent a lot of time on the tutorials, making sure that, you know, you have to have no prior chess knowledge to pick it up.
Yeah.
It starts with, this is how you move a pawn.
Yeah.
This is how you move a knight. Which sounds like a bit silly, but some people genuinely don't know chess. They've never played it. And we just wanted it. You know, it looks cool when you look at it on the Steam store. You're like, holy shit, look at this. There's like crazy knights, and you can play against a Grim Reaper and all this cool stuff. So we just wanted everyone to be able to get in and have fun with that. And I think that's what we've done. So,
I know with Pure Chess, you guys released a lot of DLC and themed boards and stuff like that. Are you going to be doing the same with Chess Ultra?
I mean, at the minute, we're still in launch mode. So we're focusing on kind of making sure... Well, we're kind of coming to the end of the first week now, but we're super focused on making sure everything's running super smoothly. So in terms of updates, there are updates coming.
Yeah.
Definitely. This is just the beginning for Chess Ultra. From our perspective anyway.
Yeah.
And we've got loads of plans of things to come. But right now we are super in, like, let's just make sure everything's cool, everything's good. And it has been so far. Yeah. Everything's been great. But we're still in that mode, aren't we? Like, the dev team are still kind of keeping a watchful eye over everything. And yeah, so definitely updates are coming, but we just don't have anything to share right now because we're still in launch mode.
Yeah, definitely.
Makes sense. So yeah, the game is out now for $12.49 on Xbox, PlayStation, Steam. Works with VR, works with PlayStation VR. Maybe a Switch version is coming eventually.
I love your perseverance.
I want it to happen. If I will it into existence, I'll take that as a win.
Yeah, I want it to happen too. I really, really do. You know my love for the Switch. And if it happens, like we've said, you'll be the first to know.
Yes.
Sounds good. So is there anything else that you want to discuss today? I know we've been chatting for about an hour now.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
If anybody listening or watching has any questions about any of the stuff from today, we have a Discord server. So if any of you guys have got any questions for us, we're on there pretty much every day. And you can join that. It's just discord.gg/ripstone. And you can jump over there and come talk to us about Chess Ultra, Ironcast, the Switch, Amiibo, dogs, cake, literally any old thing. So that's it really, I would say. And yeah, you can catch us on Twitch twice a week. And we're going to be streaming after this. So
Mondays and Wednesdays at 4 p.m. UK time.
And that where can they find that? twitch.tv/ripstone games. So I'm trying to help you here. Get the pimping out. How can people stay in touch with everyone?
we're just twitch.tv/ripstone games on Twitch.
Yep.
Easy peasy.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
Holly, Michelle, it is always fantastic having you on the show. Come back again soon.
Oh, we will.
We always enjoy being on the show. We love talking to you, Joe.
Aw, I'm going to blush.
And we do have more announcements coming this year. So
yeah, we'll have more reasons to talk to you.
Yeah.
Not that we even need reasons. So
I know the last time we were here, we had nothing. I mean, last time we just gave you nothing, did we? You were really trying and we were just refusing to announce anything. But at least we had things to talk about this time.
Yes.
And next time, even more.
Yeah.
Are there any hopes for Big Sky Infinity to make it to Xbox yet?
Oh, you asked this as well last time.
I did, and I'm going to ask again.
I can't remember what my answer was last time, but the answer is probably still the same. It's not on our radar at the moment.
Shit.
But again, we never say never. So, you know, I'm not going to say no, but I'm not going to say yes.
Oh, now that is a middle of the road answer if I ever heard one.
Yeah, it's kind of like I said, it's not something that's on our radar, but but yeah, you never know.
I would love to see that show up. And then, was it Knit Underground or Night Underground?
Yep, Knit Underground.
Knit. Right. They're running that at SGDQ this year, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh my god, I love SG. I can't even say it. SGDQ. It's like one of my favorite things ever.
Which should be going on by the time you hear this show.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. When is this going up?
Like next week, maybe. Yeah,
this should be up probably Monday or Tuesday.
Ooh, that's soon.
So it should be going on right now if you jump on to the Twitches.
You will not be able to miss that on Twitch. Mm. I mean, if any of you want to check that out, Summer Games Done Quick is literally my life. So go check that out. There's some really cool stuff happening for charity over there. So, yeah, should be on the front page of Twitch. It usually is every year.
Yeah, I think I was looking through their schedule, and I think they're doing a Knit Underground run this year.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. Good.
I would love to see that come to Xbox as well sometime.
Yeah, it is a great game, like, really great game. Like, the Metroidvania style is just, you know, really, really cool. Again, that's another one that kind of we haven't really talked about bringing it to Xbox, have we? But it's, you know, we never say never. I know we've said that 100 times, but it really is true. If it comes to the point where we think that something should be on a console that it's not on, we'll look at it.
Well, consider this a formal request for Knit Underground and Big Sky Infinity to both make the jump to Xbox and Switch. Spread the love to all. Hell, Extreme Exorcism on the Switch would be awesome, too.
Yeah, no, see, that's another one, isn't it? That would be great on Switch.
Just all the games on Switch.
All of them, yeah.
Hey, Extreme Exorcism was one of the first games that we reviewed on this show when we started doing reviews and interviews and stuff like that. So yeah, I'll cool always have a special place in my heart for Extreme Exorcism.
Yeah, it's definitely like a fun kind of like couch player, fun with your friends kind of game. Definitely.
Indeed, good stuff. And with two Joy-Con, sounds like a great opportunity there.
This pressure, Joe.
Well, hopefully the next time you're on, we'll be able to talk about new announcements, and I'm eager to see what Ripstone is working on.
Yes.
Yeah, no, we're really excited to share as well. And like I say, next time we definitely will have more stuff to shout about. We've got a crazy year planned of really exciting stuff, so we can't wait to be able to share it with you.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to every time you come on, you just have more and more that you're allowed to talk about.
Yes.
We started with nothing, and then we got to hear with Chess Ultra and Ironcast, and then all the other questions you can't answer, and then next time we're going for three games you could talk about.
Yes. Let's do it. We'll do that. Yeah, we'll bear that in mind.
Awesome. I look forward to it. Again, Holly and Michelle, thank you so much for joining. Do you have any final words to end the show?
That's a tough question. Any final words? Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
It has been amazing. We always love coming on the podcast.
Yeah.
So much fun. So yeah, we're really grateful. And if anyone listening wants to follow us, see what we're doing at Ripstone, you can find us on Twitter at Ripstone Games, on Discord at discord.gg/Ripstone, or over on Twitch, we're just Ripstone Games. So yeah, we really appreciate you having us on.
Yeah, always lovely to talk to you.
And also, go buy Chess Ultra. It's out now.
And then go on your Twitch stream and beat you at Chess Ultra.
Yes.
Yeah, or maybe let us win. Come and play against us at Chess Ultra on Twitch and let us win.
Let us win.
Final words, yeah.
Final words. Please, God, let us win a game.
Yeah, exactly that.
Man Bun Bear.